You're listening to episode 88 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Cheng.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Cheng, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hey, what's up, Storyteller Tribe? Oh my God, today is the big day that we're finally releasing our celebratory 88th episode. I am so excited to get into it with you. And before we jump into the intro, I wanted to thank Sunbasket for sponsoring today's episode. I am so proud to collaborate with a meal kit delivery service that focuses on offering organic, healthy, and delicious recipes and ingredients straight to your door. Check out sunbasket.com/88cups to check out the special offer they have for our Storyteller Tribe, and hang around at the end of the show to find out more about Sunbasket. I also wanted to thank BookCon for sponsoring today's episode. BookCon is the ultimate celebration of books where your favorite stories come to life, and it's all happening on June 3rd and 4th at the Javits Center in New York City. Hang around at the end of the show to find out more about BookCon. By the way, if you don't already know, I'm really selective about which brands to collaborate with. So any of the brands that you hear on our show are the ones that have gone through very careful consideration. And by doing so, I make sure that they're truly beneficial and valuable to you, and that their messages also align with my values. Whenever you support our sponsors during the time of our collaboration, that also means you're indirectly supporting us. So thank you so much in advance for checking them out. Now on to our show. Today's milestone episode features 8 incredible listeners from our 88 Cups of Tea community. I remember when I first launched this podcast, the 88th episode seemed so far away, and even thinking about it was quite overwhelming. I honestly cannot believe the day is here already, and we're actually at that point where I originally thought was so far out of reach. Thank you all so much for getting us to this episode, to the 88th episode. I can't stop saying it. And also thank you all for taking the time to submit your applications to have a chance at being featured on today's episode. This selection process was incredibly difficult. I know each of you spent an average of 40 minutes to complete the application, and that was a lot that I threw at you. And I'm really blown away by your thoughtful and lengthy responses, which made it all the more challenging to try and narrow it down to only 8 listeners. All of the guests you're going to hear from today have been longtime listeners and a huge part of our community. They have all been so active, engaged, and vocal in our community. It was really so, so nice to talk to each of them. I'm so excited for you to hear from fellow members in our community. So let's kick it off with our first guest, Tia Bearden. Tia, what's up? I'm so happy to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am so good. Where are you calling in from?
I am in Alabama in my home office. I got too nervous at work. My boss had been like, it's fine. Just take your break and do your interview. And then I was like, the internet will crash. Everything will burn down. I have to go home. I told him I'd come back.
I can't believe you took off work for this. You are the best. Oh my gosh. I'm so honored that you went home just for this. And I feel so special.
You are special.
Well, thank you. As are you, darling. So Tia, tell me, how did you first fall in love with writing?
I'm a huge reader. My family had to build special bookshelves in my room growing up because there were stacks and stacks everywhere. So they built wraparound bookshelves. I had every Babysitter's Club book imaginable. That's where I spent all of my money. All of my allowance was always books. And I'd be like, let's go to the thrift store and get more books. The first time I ever started writing when I was younger, it was what I know now as Babysitter's Club fanfic. I was just like, I don't like the way the story ends. I can do it better.
Oh my God, I love that. How much of it did you write?
Just little notebooks full. Luckily, they've all been burned and we will never see them again.
No! Darn, I'm so sad you don't have them. When was it when you realized, hey, I can actually be a writer as a career?
I'm not sure that I've actually still had that moment where it's like a viable thing, but I do enjoy doing it. after my daughter was born, I had some really bad postpartum depression and I was in a very bad place. I left my daughter with my husband and I was like, I'm just going to drive around for a little while. I went to the public library. I went into the young adult section because why not? It's just where I randomly walked into. When you go into the library, it used to be right there on the left. I found Victoria Schwab's The Near Witch and Maggie Stiefvater's The Raven Boys book. I checked them out. They're just both really unique, strange stories. Everything else I had read prior to that wrapped up real nice and neat, and these characters were different. I'm a little weird. I'm a little different. And so I was like, okay, well, I like this. So I don't have to have perfect characters. I could try to do this. I started with NaNoWriMo. Through there, I found my very best friends, and they are wonderful. Guess I credit Victoria and Maggie and NaNo for literally saving my life because it was a very, very dark time for me.
That's amazing to know that there's works out there that have affected you that much to make you almost have this awakening.
Yeah.
I love that you mentioned NaNoWriMo. NaNoWriMo kicked my ass so bad. There are some people who love NaNoWriMo, some that are like, meh. So for you, it sounds like it's a definite, amazing, positive thing in your life to get you kickstarted, right?
Absolutely. It helps hold me accountable. I usually start out of the gate like I'm doing great. I'm meeting my word count. And then around week two, I'm just, oh God, everything's terrible. Why did I decide to do this?
That was like me on day two. I admire you.
When you're a new mom, you just lose yourself. Suddenly you've become Allison's mom and I'm Jeff's wife. And then you're also identified by your jobs. You're a coworker, you're a friend, you're a spouse, you're all these different things to everyone else, but who are you to you? And so all of it is lots of exploration into my head, and it's not always a safe place, but I was like, but who am I? I didn't know who I was anymore. Writing gave me my own identity. It gave me my own thing outside of my family. It's something for me. My husband is absolutely lovely. He has decided for the past couple of years that he'll call Tuesday nights or the nights I go and I write with my friends. And so Tuesday nights are daddy-daughter date night. And so they go out to dinner or maybe ice cream if she's had a really good week. That's their time. So she's learned to guard her time with that very carefully. So if something happens and I have to be at home on a Tuesday night, she's like, I need you to go away because this is mine and daddy's time.
That is so cute. I love how you and your husband came down to figuring out what works for you and what works for the family without disrupting anything. Do you have any suggestions for the rest of our community who might need a little bit of advice on how to get their own writing time in, but not feel guilty that it's taking away from family time?
It sounds like I have it all figured out right now, but it was a huge battle trying to figure out. There's a huge thing called mom guilt. I feel really terrible of any time that I take away of spending with my family. But also I know that when I go away, even it's Tuesday right now, so tonight I'm going to meet with my friends in Birmingham and we're going to write for a few hours and I'll come back. And that gives me the energy I need to be a better mom and to be a better wife. Don't be afraid to set time for yourself, because as a parent, you're always sacrificing yourself for everyone else. And I guess that's just the best advice I can give, is just make your own time. Don't be afraid of it. And it might be hard at first, because it was really hard adjustment. Because when I started writing on Tuesday nights, Allison was still really small. I think she was probably 2. So it's hard to leave them when they're babies like that.
But I can understand that. Was your husband always supportive of your writing?
So this sounds really bad, but I know part of it is because I didn't take myself as seriously or writing as seriously until this point. I got accepted into a Madcap retreat. Natalie Parker is amazing. And so I went to their beach retreat last February. Last year, I decided it was being brave, that I was going to do things outside of my comfort zone. I applied to this workshop and I didn't know if my work was good enough to get accepted into it. So I applied for 2 different workshops and I got accepted into both of them. So it wasn't until I went to the workshop and they were just, Tia, this is amazing. Sit your ass in the chair and finish it.
I love that. Yes.
It wasn't until then until he was just okay. Like sometimes he always worked with me, and allowed is such a terrible word, but we worked together on the time. But sometimes it would almost seem kind of begrudgingly until he realized that this is a serious thing. Of course, I'm doing it for myself and doing it for fun, but that it actually has merit. And I think it probably took someone else telling me that my writing had worth and merit for him to be like, okay. So now he's on board. It's also how you grow and you change in a relationship. Dynamics are always changing. I hope that I'm always learning and growing and changing. I know I'm not the person that he met so many moons ago. I'm not the same person that I was then, and he's not either. And it's growing and adjusting, and you have growing pains. Now we have it figured out. Well, tonight was really hard. Allison didn't want to go to sleep, and she was difficult. Potty training was all during that time, too. Now that she's older and can handle herself, it's a lot easier going.
I do agree with you 100%. Everybody changes and grows, and there are growing pains. I would really love for the community to hear about what you're working on right now, your work in progress. Yours is super fun.
It's a YA contemporary, and the working title is called Little Foxes. It's about this girl named Charlie, and she's a musical prodigy. All she ever wanted was to live in this small town with her aunt, who is her best friend. Her family moves around a lot. So for her 16th birthday, she thinks her aunt is going to let her come live with her so she can have some stability. Instead, she gives her some more piano lessons from a super famous person. And she melts down, and then they get into a car accident and her aunt passes away. Then 6 months later, where the story starts is she has to move to this small town that her aunt and her mother are from. So she gets everything that she wanted, but her aunt isn't there. It's this huge exploration of grief, also falling in love for the first time and making real friends and learning to trust people. She starts an all-girl rock band and she falls in love with the girl next door. In the meantime, she finds out this huge family secret that's been kept from her.
Ooh, I'm really digging this. I want the community to learn more about your inspiration behind this story, about your character, who you pulled the character from.
My dad died when I was 20. He had a massive heart attack, and it was very sudden and unexpected.
He was so young, too.
Yeah, he was 40. When it's a tragic situation like that, your life is set, and you're before this moment happens, and the after. Everything in the middle, you just kind of get lost. Working on Little Foxes is also a way therapeutic of dealing with grief. It never goes away. You just learn to deal with it in different ways. Charlie, my main character, she is a little bit based off of me. I guess she's the version of myself that I would want to be. She's a lot tougher than me and deals with things a lot better, but I'm super emotional. I'll cry about everything. I'll watch a sad commercial and cry.
This is us. I cry every episode. So don't worry. I'm right there with you, crying alongside every commercial.
I watched one the other day that's about these two moms that adopt this girl and they're learning sign language.
Oh my God. I saw that. Is that the one where they're best friends and they're not in a romantic relationship? It's a platonic best friend relationship where they chose to mother the kid?
No. This is something different. So I read a story about that, but then I saw a commercial that they're learning sign language and they adopt this girl, and it's just really sad.
I know you're saying that with grieving and when someone passes away, you're just never the same anymore, which I can absolutely understand. Do you find that writing Charlie's story and about grieving in your story has helped you therapeutically?
So it's been over 10 years since my dad passed away. So a lot of it, it's still like really hard. You have to unpack it. And the scene that I was writing the other day, she's having her first sleepover with all of her new friends. And it's really weird for her because she's never really had that. Somebody grabs a mixing bowl and they're making brownies. Seeing someone with that mixing bowl triggered her to the last time that she was in this house, which is her aunt's house. They were making holiday cookies. She had to excuse herself and go to the bathroom and try to get herself together. It's little things like that. My dad, every time it's his birthday or the anniversary of his death, his favorite thing in the world was a Mountain Dew and Reese's Cup. I'll have that and remember him. Just little things like that. You never know what's going to trigger you. Just being completely overwhelmed and it's in your face again and you're just like, I don't really know how to deal with this. It's always unexpected. And especially the first year is getting to know your new normal, because no matter what happens, life keeps going on. And you have to learn to pick yourself up. And moving on doesn't mean that you love them any less. It just means that you love yourself enough to keep going.
That was beautiful. What was your hardest scene to write?
Fun time is that, like, I have never completed a first draft of any novel. I get various states and then I find a new project I want to work on. I've been working on this one for a while and it's taking a long time, but it's fine. It's going to take as long as it has to take for me to get it right. So far, like, I did some pre-writing. It was the scene where Charlie and her Aunt Morgan had the car crash. Charlie being really mad at Morgan and saying some really mean things that teenagers say. You know, you don't think about, I'm so mad at you and you're ruining my life and why don't you love me? Then having this car accident, that's really hard.
Do you foresee more difficult scenes coming up, that kind of level of difficulty? Or do you feel like you got over the biggest hump and it's smooth sailing from now on?
No, I think there'll be more. Charlie is very angsty, something I too can relate
to. I love that. Just from your experience dealing with that other difficult scene, what do you find best works for you moving forward? How do you think you'll best prepare yourself to push past another difficult scene and to keep that momentum going?
I think that's the hardest part, is staying motivated. Recently, I finally wrote what I know is the definitive 25% mark, is the point of no return when Charlie has to make a choice. And I was just like, I did this really big thing, so now I'm going to take a break. I shouldn't have done that, because now I get to the part, oh, writing is really hard, you guys. I guess I just have to keep showing up and try every day. It's going to continue to be hard. The whole book is grief and trust, and these are some really hard issues. And then I've also got subplots or Southern ladies fighting the patriarchy, which is fun. That's the fun part of the book. The external plot is the fun part. The internal is a lot harder.
That's always the most difficult. Get that layering in is always the most complicated, at least for me too. With your book overall, Tia, what do you hope to achieve with your book?
Oh my gosh, so many things. First of all, I hope that I'm able to finish it and that it actually gets somewhere and that people enjoy it.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
I want something that will make people laugh and make them cry and make them think. But also, it's really important to me. I feel like Alabama and the South itself is not always represented the best, and fairly so, because it's not been a wonderful place, especially for people of color. I want an accurate representation of what it is. Have you heard of S-Town podcast?
I have. I actually just was in the middle of listening to the first one.
Fun fact, I live 7 miles from there.
Oh my gosh. So do you feel like it's pretty accurate what he's saying?
Well, I don't want to spoil anything about the podcast for you. So I felt like Brian, whatever his name is, from NPR, did a really good job of showing Alabama just how it is, like good, bad, and ugly. And I want to show my characters like that. I want somebody from my hometown to be able to pick up this book and be like, this is authentic. It's very important to me that it's authentic, but also fun. Like, why contemporary is fun to write, I think. I don't know that I could ever do fantasy or sci-fi. That world building is hard, but world building itself with why contemporary is also really hard.
But that's why it's even more rewarding, right, when we get through it. Have you touched on The Serpent King by Jeff Zentner?
Oh my gosh. I love that book so much.
And I was going to say, a lot of what you're saying, it just completely brought me back to The Serpent King and his style of writing and the way he was showing his hometown and the characters too. And it really focuses on the relationships of the characters.
I thought Jeff did an amazing job. It was one of my top three reads of 2016.
Oh, amazing. Well, what are your other top two?
And I Darken.
Oh, yes. Oh, we have Kirsten White. Yes.
Oh, I love her. I love everyone. I really loved that book. I'm blanking on the other one. Oh, yeah. 2016 was the year I found Amy Spalding, and I consumed, like, all of her backlist. She's writing this book right now called Jordy Perez and the Best Cheeseburger in L.A.
That's so cute. What a great title. That's awesome. I'm so happy that you really enjoyed Jeff's work as well. And I know that your book will touch readers all around. There's no doubt about it. Tia, I had an amazing time chatting with you. Before you go, I do want us to wrap it up and you letting us know where we can find you on social media.
I'm everywhere at Tia Bearden.
Amazing. That's easy enough. I love it. I just love Tia's warm and bubbly personality. And next we have Gloria Chow.
This is so exciting. You were a dentist before you got into writing. How on earth did that happen?
I had a really windy path here. My parents are very traditional Taiwanese. They immigrated here for graduate school. Growing up, it was all about math and science. It just never occurred to me that I could even have a career in anything right-brained. I went to MIT, I studied business and biology, and I decided to go to dental school because at the time I thought it would be a great fit for my interests. When I got there, it turned out to be very different from what I thought it would be. I wasn't very happy. And the only thing that could take me away from the stress of it all was reading. And I fell in love with young adult books. Eventually, I started trying my own writing. When it came time for my husband and I to move states for his job, every time I tried to look for a new job as a dentist, I just didn't really want to do any of the opportunities out there. And he was the one who suggested, "You seem to love writing. Why don't you give it a shot?" At the time when he said it, it felt so something I wasn't allowed to do that it took me a while to wrap my head even around this possibility. But the more I thought about it, the more right it felt. Eventually, I decided if I try this for 5 years, and even if nothing comes out of it, I don't think I'll regret it. And I decided to just go for it. And I was really fortunate that it's been about 3 years now, and I signed with an agent, and my book is actually coming out next year. I'm really excited.
Congratulations. That's so exciting. This is insane. You took a huge leap of faith, which is amazing. How did your parents take the news?
It was very difficult. I understood where they were coming from. They had sacrifice so much with the hopes that I wouldn't have to sacrifice in the future. And they wanted me to have a very stable career. And I, of course, understood that and respected that. I think our biggest problem was that we didn't know how to communicate that effectively. We just had this huge gap between us. Actually, it was the book that ended up getting us through that. I had so many things that I needed to ask my mom specifically to put into the book. I wanted to understand why she did certain things that she did, what in the culture made her think a certain way, and it forced me to ask her questions that I was really scared to ask before, and it made us learn how to communicate. They've actually come around because we've talked a lot, and she's very supportive, and so is my dad. They're both very supportive now, but it definitely was a really hard road to get here, and it took us quite a few years.
Oh, wow. First of all, I'm so happy for you. I'm not in your shoes fully, but I can understand where you're coming from. You know, being filial and being respectful and honoring the work that they've gone through and that they've sacrificed for us. So there's a bit of that guilt, right, that we carry around.
Exactly.
And I can definitely get that. Do you have siblings?
I do. I have two older brothers.
Oh, you're the baby?
I am the baby and I'm the only girl.
Okay, so you're like the baobei. You're like the precious one.
Yeah, my dad, he called me baobei.
I was not the baobei, really. I was the oldest, so I got all the crap. And then my baby sisters are the baobeis. That is difficult too because you are the baby girl, the only girl. So there's a lot more protection around you and not only just your parents, but your big brothers as well. Did your brothers go on with the career that your parents wanted them to do?
My oldest brother is a doctor.
That does not help. That definitely right. They're probably going to expect you to also follow him. And then what's your second brother?
He's a professor of economics.
Oh my God.
So yeah, okay. It was especially hard because of that.
Oh God, so sorry. No one cut you a break. Once I broke that family tradition of doing the traditional business or whatever field, maybe that's why my sisters had it so easy. So if your brother got into artistry or something, it would be a very right. different story. And knowing that you have your family support more so now than before, how does that feel for you?
It feels great. It's definitely a weight off. Although I did write the book from a very honest perspective from the beginning, even before they were supportive. I think part of our conflict drove my desire to write a very honest portrayal. I wanted a voice out there that discussed this cultural gap in a very raw way that other people could relate to, because it's something that's not addressed that often in young adult literature. I thought it was really important. I wish I had something when I was growing up just to tell me you're not alone. A lot of other people struggle with this kind of issue, and it is very difficult to be stuck between two cultures. It's okay not to feel you completely belong to one or the other. And so I started this book with the intention of trying to capture that message.
I'm sure the rest of our community is dying to know a screenshot of your work now that you said is going to be published next year.
I'd love to. It's titled American Panda, and it follows a 17-year-old MIT freshman whose parents are very traditional. They want her to become a doctor and marry a pre-approved Taiwanese suitor that they've handpicked. Problem is, she's germophobic. She's falling asleep in all of her biology classes, and she's developed a crush on her Japanese classmate. The book is a coming-of-age story where she's trying to figure out how to be herself, how to balance these two identities that don't seem to fit together in any way. And she doesn't want to lose her parents, but at the same time, she doesn't know how to live this one life that they want for her. And she's also has a lot of pressure because her older brother has already been disowned by her parents because he didn't marry someone that they approved of. She doesn't want that to happen to her, but at the same time, she doesn't know if she can go through with this path that is obviously so wrong for her.
Circling back with what you said earlier in our conversation, you had a lot of questions that you had to ask your mom for your story. Could you give us examples of the questions that you asked your mom?
So one of them was I asked her a lot about why she wanted us to do a certain set number of careers. My parents never explicitly said to me they want me to be a doctor, but it was understood that there were left brain careers that were more acceptable than the right. So I talked to her a lot about that. And she actually shared a lot of stories about my family and her upbringing that I hadn't heard before. She came from six generations of doctors, and it was a big point of pride. I didn't know that. And for them, it was the most respectable career that you could go into. And I worked this into my story where the mother tells the daughter, "You can do it. You're smart. I want better for you than I had." I did get a chance to explore that a little bit more with my mom as well, where she doesn't work and she gave up her career to take care of us. She wanted to make sure that I was independent and had my own career. And she just wanted to make sure that I was okay no matter what situation arose. And I had to explain to her that those aren't as important for me as they might have been for you and your relationship.
Was your mom a doctor herself, or she came from a line of doctors?
She came from a line of doctors. She was actually a nurse.
Oh, wow. So she's still in the medical field?
Yes. Right.
That's even heavier responsibility and guilt.
Lots of guilt.
Yeah. What about your dad's side?
He is a computer scientist. His whole family, they're all computer scientists. He also studied math. So again, very left-brained.
You guys are so smart. Talk about bravery. I'm so happy that there's a story like yours that's going to be out there. So you're saying it's going to be out next year. Do you know when next year?
Right now, it's spring 2018, so somewhere between January and May, but we haven't set the release date yet.
That is so exciting. I cannot wait for your story to hit the bookshelves. Your book needs to be out there, and there needs to be more stories like yours to share with readers. I know that growing up, you didn't have many books that you could relate to. Was there fiction that changed your life, really impacted you in the way of your storytelling? For me, it's Amy Tan. For you, was there one author that you're like, oh my God, this just changed my whole worldview about writing?
There are definitely a few YA authors I've read recently that have impacted my writing. Amy Tan was definitely one of them. That was from younger days as well, in addition to recently. A lot of these diverse writers who write very honest stories, I think that gave me the motivation to go for it. When I set out to write this book, it was a little bit daunting because there wasn't that much out there like it. And so just seeing authors like Nicola Yoon and Jenny Han, diverse writers who aren't afraid to put their own culture into the book and be able to write from that perspective just gave me the confidence to try to do it as well. Whereas before, when I first started writing, I was a little bit nervous about doing that because I wasn't sure if it would ever get published. But I was motivated enough to give it a shot, and I'm really glad that I did because I really hope that this book can at least have one reader who picks it up and feels like they're not alone.
You're going to have a lot of readers. It's going to connect with a lot of people. I'm very, very excited for this. And outside of wanting to write something that you could relate to and for something to resonate with people, what else do you hope to achieve with your book being out there?
One of my other goals was I put a lot of humor into the book, a lot of cultural humor similar to the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding. And it took me, I would say, 30 years to be able to see the humor in some of these situations with my family. And I think it really helps to be able to appreciate the humor that's just in these daily situations. And so I hope just being able to give someone a laugh and being able to relate in that way will help them also learn to use that as either a coping mechanism or just as a way to enjoy this funny dynamic with their family, because it's definitely made my relationship with my mom a lot better that we can joke about certain things, and I really hope that I can give that to others.
I love that. It's crazy what humor can do, right? It's such a powerful tool just to bring many people together and cultures too. And overall, writing your story, what was the thought process behind your title, American Panda?
I wanted a short title that captured the main conflict, which was just that she didn't feel like she fit in either culture and she was struggling with her identity. And throughout the book, we have a lot of panda metaphors. The mom is constantly telling her, you know, don't be a panda. She uses this Chinese phrase, which is yuan guan guan. They're, you know, round and silly and cute. And, you know, you need to be like a cat. You know, you need to know how to flirt with men. And she describes the perfect wife and all these things. And so the panda metaphor keeps coming up. And so that, for the main character, Mei, relates to her Chinese side. And then obviously the American shows the other side of her identity. I hoped it was a short, catchy way to kind of convey the main issue in the book.
I love that. That is such a brilliant way of getting into your title and finding a title. That's fantastic. And I think it's really cool too for our community to hear the behind the scenes thought process of how you came up with that title. What was your hardest and most difficult scene to write?
I think one of the hardest scenes to write turned out to be my favorite, because it was just so honest and real. And the story very much focuses on the main character's relationship with her mother. I hope this doesn't give away too much, but there is a scene toward the end when the mom is finally honest with her and they actually talk about things. And most of what the mother says was a conversation that I actually had with my own mother, where she admits things that were hard for her about the culture that she was bottled up before and never let her daughter see. And just because it's so personal to me, every time I reread that scene, I actually get a little bit teary, because it just reminds me how far my mother and I have come. And I actually talk to her all the time now on the phone. And it's been such a long journey for us to get here. And I'm really happy that I could put this into the book. And I really hope that the rawness comes through in the writing so that other people can feel just a little bit of what I went through.
I'm sure it will. I'm really, really excited for this, because it definitely resonates with me and my relationship with my mom. And I'm sure for many people, whether they are from our same cultural background or not, it just, you know, stories about mothers and daughters, that is universal. I cannot wait for readers to have your book in their hands. And I know it's going to very much move them as well. I would love to wrap up this interview with one more question, if that's okay.
Of course.
From everything that you've experienced and your writing, if you are a mentor, what is that one advice you would share with your mentee?
I would say the most important thing is to believe in yourself and not give up. And it sounds a little cliche, but I'll dive into it a little bit more, where there will always be voices outside telling you certain things aren't right or things aren't working for them. And it's just such a subjective business that there will always be differing opinions. And I think the most important thing is to trust your gut and to go with what you believe is the right way to go, and tell the story that you want to tell, because at the end of the day, you're the only one who knows your story as well as you do. And so even if other people have differing opinions, if you think that this is the right way to go, stick to that, because you're the only one who can tell your story that way. And that's what's going to make it unique. I think sometimes it's easy to fall into the trap of wanting to please everyone. And then if you make too many changes, you end up with something that doesn't feel real to you anymore. And the power of books that resonate with people come from a very honest place that you've experienced parts of it.
Those were nuggets of gold. Thank you so much, Gloria. That was beautifully said. Now, where can the rest of our community find you on social media?
I'm on Twitter. My handle is Gloria C. Chao, and my last name is spelled C-H-A-O. And I'm also on Facebook with the same handle. I have a website. I'm very accessible. My email is up on my website. So I love connecting with other writers and readers, and especially 88 Cups of Tea listeners. So please reach out. I would love to hear from you.
That was such an awesome story she shared about family dynamics, and I resonated so much with her own personal mother and daughter relationship. Next up, we have Tara Creel. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm so grateful to you for being such a supportive tribe member in our community, and it means so much to us. What's exciting you most about your work right now?
I'm actually in revision stages of quite a few projects. I'm reading a lot of books on my craft and trying to learn more on how to make the first draft better, because I'm the type of writer I can whip out a first draft in a couple weeks. If I have enough time, I spend a few hours every day and my first draft comes out pretty fast, but then I need to work on it for a really long time to make it something that's publishable. So I'm reading a lot of craft books and working on revisions right now, and it's fun. I'm learning a lot.
That's awesome. I'm so jealous of you. I wish I could hash it out and get it all out within a few weeks for my first draft. Do you have any craft books that you're in love with that you could share with the rest of our community?
I really like the one by Mary Cole on writing Kidlit. It's really good. And Bird by Bird is amazing. Her words are so beautiful. I read it for fun just all the time. She's so amazing.
I'm so happy that you mentioned Bird by Bird. The first one that you mentioned, was it Mary Cole you said?
Yes, she used to be an agent and now she's an editor. It's called Writing for Children, Kidlit 411 or something like that. It's one of my favorites for writing children's books. She has a lot of ideas about voice and things that are different for writing for children than for adults.
Tara, you mentioned that you're in the middle of moving. Do you mind sharing with us where you're headed and where you are right now?
I'm in Southern California right now. My husband grew up here, and after we got married, we've lived here. But my family is from Utah, and we've actually been trying to get back for quite some time, and he just got a transfer with his position. So we're moving back to Utah.
Congratulations. So by the time your episode airs, you will have already started settling into your new home. And I'm so excited for you because you'll be back with your family.
Thank you. I'm really excited. We're sad to leave, but this has been our home for 10 years. We're also excited to go.
How old are your kids right now? Because that means that was your home where they grew up.
Yes, I have four boys. My oldest, he'll be 10 next month, and then I have one that will be 8 next month, and then I have another son that's 5 and a son that's 2.
Congratulations on your gorgeous boys, and also, wow, that is a home where all of the boys grew up in.
Yes.
It's like a bittersweet, huh?
It is.
I'm happy that they're going to be reconnected with their grandparents and their aunts and uncles and cousins, and I think that'll be super fun for them to look forward to. How are the kids doing with the move? Are they ready? Are they excited?
They're excited. We go back and visit my dad a lot in Utah. And every time we go, I think they think it's going to be vacation when we move, because every time we go to Utah, it's vacation and it's fun. So I think they think it's going to be fun all the time. Once we get there and they have to go to school and do all the normal day things, I think it's going to hit them. Oh, maybe we aren't as excited to move.
Tara, yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. You've been a part of our community. So I feel when you say you're moving, I feel like the rest of us feel we're moving too. I would love to touch on your story. Could you please share an overview about, well, I know you're working on a lot of projects, right? So how about whatever you feel most comfortable with sharing?
I have a couple that I'm querying right now, but the one that I'm going back to revise is one that I wrote after my mom passed away, and it's called The Wish Garden, and it's about a young girl. She's 10, and her mom passes away, and she finds this magical garden in the forest behind her house that is every flower in the garden is a wish of people in her town. She works on thinking about her wishes when her mom was alive and wishes that her mom wouldn't die. The thing behind fate, not all wishes can come true because some wishes interfere with other wishes, and that sometimes a wish that doesn't come true actually leads to other wishes coming true. Just the whole idea behind that. It's just a colorful garden where she finds color when her life is dark at the moment.
Oh my God, Tara, you just got me all teary-eyed right now and I have goosebumps. You just dove in real quick. Oh my gosh, I wasn't ready for that. I need to know what age range you're hoping for this book to land in the hands of.
I've tend to write middle grade. I'm not steamy enough for YA. I love reading YA, but I'm not very good at writing it.
I love that you found your strengths. And coming to that, how did you find out that you're better at writing middle grade? And even though you love reading YA, how did you find your own voice?
I actually wrote a YA manuscript and I had an editor go through it and she said, this just sounds younger. And then I started writing another YA manuscript and I thought, this does sound younger. And I didn't know, my high school experience and my YA experience was pretty tame and pretty sheltered. And I didn't want to write about my experience. I want to write about other experiences and things that I like to read, but I didn't feel like I was qualified to write that. And middle grade, I feel like I can write more issues without necessarily having gone through them. It was easier for me to write younger, more things for me to relate to or remember. I guess I remember middle grade more.
Could we touch a little bit about how you said this current story that you shared was inspired by your mom?
Sure, I don't mind at all. My mom was sick for my whole life, for as long as I can remember. She was in and out of hospitals, and she went to a lot of doctors all over the country, and nobody knew what it was. They knew it was a connective tissue disorder, but nobody knew what it was, so they didn't know how to help her. And basically, her body was just shutting down. There was always times growing up, I remember we had Christmas in the hospital one year. It was just normal for me to have her in and out of the hospital. But when she was home, I mean, she was there. She coached me in softball. She did all those things. But it was always a thought, my mom's going to get sicker, and I'm not always going to have my mom with me. She passed away when I was 29, and I was living in California, and she was in Utah. There'd been a lot of times where she'd gone in the hospital, and my dad said, I don't know if she's going to make it, but she pulled through. She's a fighter. And so we just kept thinking, oh, she's going to pull through this. My mom had been life flighted to a hospital down in Salt Lake City, and my sister and I were talking, and we're like, we really felt like we just had a feeling that we needed to go. Because we'd always ask if she wanted us to go, and she always said, no, it's fine. She was still saying that. Both my mom and my dad were both saying, she's fine. They were planning a trip in the next month or so to come see us in California. So they just said, it's fine. But we got our youngest babies, and we drove all through the night. We knew we had to go. And by the time we got there in the morning, my dad called and said, your mom thinks this is it. She wants you to come see her. We said, we're right outside the hospital. We're coming up right now.
I have chills everywhere. Wow, talk about intuition. Isn't that crazy? That moment you and your sister knew. So you're saying that till now, they still don't know what that was that caused your mom's illness?
No, they never found out what it was. She stayed in the Mayo Clinic for a couple months. A lot of doctors studied her case. Nobody knew what it was. She just started getting sick when she was 18 or 19 years old, and her body was just deteriorating.
Oh my God, I am so sorry. How was that moment? Did you find closure? Did you have a chance to say what you wanted to say? What was that like for you?
It's one of those things where you think, because you've been thinking about it a lot, and it wasn't like a car crash and it was sudden, you know? So you think it would be different. And it was a little bit, but I mean, you're still never ready for it. And I remember talking with my sister on the drive up to Utah, and we're thinking, okay, what are the things that we want closure on for us, that we want to say, we're sorry for this, or please forgive us for this? You know, those things that you want to say. But as soon as we walked into the room, the only thing I could think of was, how can I make my mom feel better? This isn't for me to feel better about things that I want to say sorry for. What can I tell her so she knows that she did everything she could do and so she can leave peacefully? Because I still have time left to go through my stuff. I want her to know that we're going to be okay, that she did her job, and that we're good. And we wanted her to be happy.
Thank you for that, Tara. That was really, really raw and very powerful. How are you and your sister? Are you older?
She's older by 14 months. We're very close.
You guys are basically twins.
Yes. And we live in the same town, luckily. I mean, like I said, we both grew up in Utah, but she got a teaching job out here after she graduated from college. And I had just graduated as well. And I had no idea what I was doing with my life. So I just came to stay with her for a little bit. And that's when I met my husband and I stayed. So we both stayed in this town. So that's been good. We've had each other. We've been close. We live a few miles away. Each of our kids, we had them at the same time, just a couple months apart. So we each have kids the same ages.
Oh, you girls are so amazing. I love that. That reminds me of my youngest sisters. They're 10 months apart. They're still in college right now, but they're always talking about how they want to get married around the same time, have kids around the same time, and move wherever the other one moves. It's nice to have that. It's like your own little tribe, your own village. I had that growing up with my aunts. My mom, wherever my mom would go, because my mom's the oldest, her younger sisters would follow. So I would have my aunts wherever we would be. So I was very spoiled in that way. So I'm very lucky. Your boys are very lucky to have such an amazing aunt and also awesome cousins to have with them wherever they go. Is your sister moving back to Utah as well?
No, she's not. She's staying here. So that'll be tough for us to leave family and cousins. And my husband's whole family is here as well.
That means there will be more family trips out to California then. So there's more of a reason to come out.
We'll always come back. We love California. It'll be fun. We don't really like the snow that much. So we'll be looking for excuses to come back to California when it's snowing there.
I'm sure. I bet your sister's gonna be hoping that it snows all the time in Utah. I know that was not easy to share that, no matter when a loved one passes away, how long ago or how they did pass away. It's just always difficult to bring up. So I appreciate that so much. I know that we have quite a few members in our community who have loved ones who pass away. I know that your story is going to really resonate with them and really help them through what they're going through as well. Tara, I would love to know the way you shared what you went through with your sister and the conversations that you had in the car ride on the way to the hospital. It was very moving. Were you able to weave some of those conversations or what those conversations inspired, for example, in that specific car ride between you and your sister?
Yeah, in my story, there's some flashbacks. It's magical realism. And the family is Hispanic. So there's a lot of the Hispanic magical realism, the Latino tales that are in there. And the flashbacks are the mom teaching her these stories. In the present, she uses those stories and the memories with her mom to cope. And it's like the mom's lessons are continuing through her life, even though she's gone.
That's beautiful. And you said the Mexican roots. Are you part Mexican or is your husband?
No, I'm not. My sister's husband is. And my husband lived in Brazil for a couple of years. We have a lot of friends down there and we're really interested in the area and the culture and everything. So I did a lot of research and I read a lot of books about it.
That's amazing to know that it inspired you so much that you wanted to write a story that relates to it. What was your most difficult scene to write?
I think it was the scene right after the funeral. Just the feelings you feel. I remember after my mom passed away, waking up for the next few days even and having to remember all over again. When you're asleep, you're not thinking about it. So when you wake up, it's like everything rushes back and you have to think, oh yeah, my mom's not here anymore. My character goes through that. She wakes up and it's heavy all over again. She has that lightness of dreams and she has these light dreams and sleep is a place where she can escape. And then she wakes up and she feels it all over again and it's almost a setback and she needs to remember how to get through the day every single day again.
As the author, emotionally, how are you able to get through that on a daily basis when you are working through those difficult scenes?
Yeah, for me, the writing is actually the closure. When I don't write something down, I have these thoughts and emotions spinning around inside of me and I feel like I can't control them or I can't process them. And ever since I was young, like in elementary school, I remember going straight to my journal or straight to whatever I could to write down, and it helps me think through things. This was my coping mechanism after my mom passed away. It was the only thing I could think of to really say how I was feeling is to have somebody else go through it for me. And I feel like that was my closure. And it's good for me to go back because I wrote it a few years ago and I'm still working on it. It brings me back to that time. Anything, any holes that have resurfaced, they'll heal again because I remember the things that I went through to help me.
Do you feel like you want your book to be in the hands of your family members so that they can heal as well?
Yes, this is definitely the book of my heart. It's the one that I would definitely love. I mean, even if it never gets published, it would be something that I would do myself, make a book myself and give to family just so they could see what I went through. And I know they would see my mom in it. They would see things that other people wouldn't, special things about the mom in the book that were just about my mom.
Absolutely. I love that. Tara, that was amazing. After going through all of this, and you look back on everything that you've gone through in life and your writing career, what is the proudest moment that you've had in your life?
The proudest combined moments would be having my complete family. Every time I had a baby, I felt complete and I felt very proud and happy to have that child. And now we have our four kids and we're not having any more. I feel proud of that. Every time I'm with my family, I feel complete and I feel happy. I feel proud of our little family unit and that we'll always be together and we'll always have each other. And watching my boys grow up, be people that I never thought that I could form or influence at all, is just an amazing thing to go through. It's such a proud thing to be a parent and see how your kids are turning out. And mine are still little. It's a proud moment.
Oh, I'm so happy for you, Tara. I think that's incredible too, that your boys have a mom to look up to who they see you're always working on your craft. I think that's a very important type of atmosphere to grow up in, and to have you as a role model for them to understand, hey, if you have a dream, go for it. Doesn't matter how busy you are. Doesn't matter how big or small your family is. There's no excuses. You want something, you get it done. They see their mom doing that. That's incredible to have you as a role model for them. And how is that like, balancing writing and working on your craft and balancing family? And I know that you mentioned, like, you go to the basketball games with your sons. That's massive. You know, you're making so much time for everybody. It's natural for parents to feel guilty too, if they feel like they're spending too much time on their own craft, but not enough time on their family. How are you able to balance that?
For me, our motto in our family, through anything with my husband's job or my job, anything, it's family first. So I've always worked my writing and my editing and the other things that I do. I've always worked during nap time. And if I don't have a nap time, then I'll wake up early and do that. Because when the kids get home from school, I want to be present. I want to be present in everything that I'm doing. So I make sure to carve the time out that when I'm writing, I'm the most present as I can be. And when the kids are home, I'm the most present I can be. My husband plays basketball at night, so I use that time to write as well once the kids are in bed. I try to find the time when my kids aren't around. And soon they'll all be in school in the next few years. So I'll make sure, you know, when they're all in school, I'll have that writing time. And when they're home, it's family time.
I know you gave a fantastic advice about how to balance family and being present and showing up as a writer and also showing up as a family member. Is there anything else that you've taken and you've learned from your own career path that you'd love to impart onto the other listeners?
I've mentored a few manuscripts as well. And the thing that I always say first is you have to be willing to put in the work. And people who have been at this for a while, they understand it's not an overnight thing. It's not easy. And it's not something you can just try halfway at. You have to put in the work to get better. And it's something that you will constantly get better at for the rest of your life. So you need to set aside that time, whatever it is, and you need to focus on the things that you know you can improve on. You need to not always think that you're the best you're going to be, because even the best don't think that. My husband always says Kobe Bryant is the best basketball player, but he was the one who practiced for hours and hours and hours trying to get better. And that's what I always try to tell the writers to do. There's always something you can do better at. There's always something you can improve at, and you always need to put in the time and don't expect it to be something that won't take up your time.
That was so good, Tara. Thank you so much. And please let the rest of the community know where they can find you on social media.
I'm on Twitter. It's Tara_Creel. And I have a website. It's TaraCreelBooks.wordpress.com.
Amazing. Tara, you've been so awesome on the show. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you so much for having me. You as well. This has been so fun.
Tara was so generous in sharing how she's had to learn to cope with her mom's passing and how grief plays a critical role in her storytelling. Next, we have Amanda Connolly. How are you?
I am fantastic, and how are you?
I am so good. It's so nice to have you on the show. And I loved what you wrote for your application. How did you first fall in love with writing?
Writing has really always kind of been a constant love, I guess. There's never a time that I can think of when I wasn't writing, when I wasn't wanting to tell stories, and whether that was with Barbies in the basement or out in the front yard, whether it was Storybook Weaver, which computer game that we used to have in school, and you could tell stories with it. And once I reached an age where I felt comfortable with telling stories and the complexity of that, to want to start writing my own. So it's really always been kind of a passion. And of course, I think it came from reading. That was always my first love, but it's really kind of been a constant in my life, and it's continued ever since, which has been amazing.
Did you ever know when you were younger that this could be a career for you?
I never really looked at writing itself as a career in terms of fiction necessarily. I'm a journalist right now, so I went to journalism school. I did that through high school, and that was always the way that I thought I could make a living telling stories. When I was looking at careers and that kind of thing, it never seemed practical. It never seemed pragmatic to have a roof over your head and pay your bills and also be writing at the same time, even though that was what I loved to do. Finding different ways to tell stories, to work with unconventional narrative structures and finding characters was really what drew me to journalism and what kind of keeps me in the business even now when it's very tough. It's that kind of storytelling, that need to tell stories I love to do.
Your background in journalism and you being a journalist is one of the reasons that really drew me into your application as well. And if you don't mind, would you like to share a little bit more about yourself as a journalist and the kind of work that you've been working on?
I'm always a very, very proud graduate of Carleton University in Ottawa. It's where I learned to really tell stories in a way that's made me the writer that I am, as well as the journalist that I am too. I wouldn't be where I am without that program. For me, you know, I'm a political journalist in Ottawa, which is the capital of Canada. It's really fun. You know, I spend my days on Parliament Hill, which is our version of Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. I cover primarily foreign policy and national security, so everything to do really with defense procurement, terrorism, again, foreign policy, and kind of how Canada engages with the world, which is really, really fun because there's always so much stuff happening on that beat, and the people who are on it are so intelligent and driven and passionate about what they do that it makes my job as well a lot easier to be able to talk and not have to really push people too hard. They have amazing stories and they've been all around the world, which is so fun to hear from and to learn from them all the time.
Please share a snapshot about your work in progress.
Of course, my current work in progress, the best way to describe it is young adults, Bali-inspired dark fantasy. So it follows a young girl. Her name is Mika. She lives in this world that is very brutal, very, very tough. Magic is banned. It's illegal there. And it comes with really, really heavy penalties for those who do buy that and try and use it. And so when her brother becomes very ill, she is put in the situation of basically asking my life or his, because that is the penalty for getting caught buying magic. And when she takes that risk, it really throws her into this whole conspiracy and plot that's happening at the royal court that they are living in this Indonesia-inspired world, and thrusts her kind of into the heart of all of this politicking and the deception and betrayals that are happening there, and really makes her question the world that she thought that she knew.
Where did you get this inspiration from?
I started writing this project last summer, so I guess it would have been about June 2016. And wrote it in about a month and a half. It kind of just flew out of me. And I think a lot of that really was I was dealing with pretty crippling burnout at the time. It was really a culmination of covering the longest election campaign in our Canadian history, as well as the effects of some of the racism and intolerance that we later saw play out in the next U.S. election, of course, and are still seeing today, that really kind of were coming up in that. It was a bit of a pressure cooker environment. It was an outlet for me, again, to deal with some of the stresses that were happening in life. And it was also around the same time that I was in a press conference and had asked a question to the Chinese foreign minister who was visiting here in Ottawa. And I asked him about human rights in China, specifically about some Canadians who were being held there, and received a diplomatic response in a way that made headlines around the world. It was New York Times, The Guardian. It was quite a blowback in that regard for him, not for me, for asking the question. But part of that really was I received a lot of death threats, a lot of trolling, a lot of really negative reaction from people. It looked like coming from mainland China and who had not seen it through the lens that the rest of us were seeing that question posed through. So, of course, that added into the stress that was happening. I got a lot of support, fantastic support from people who were in Taiwan, who were in Malaysia, different parts of Asia that were not China. And so for me, you know, it kind of got me, you know, looking a lot more into the cultures there and the differences in terms of why they would be so supportive and really inspiring to me during that whole experience. And this was a way to both kind of deal with the burnout that was happening, but also look, take inspiration from the people who were really fighting back themselves and who were being so supportive for me.
Ooh, I love that. By the way, the only other Asian countries you mentioned so happen to be Taiwan. My dad's Taiwanese and my mom's Malaysian. So I love that you mentioned those countries. I was like, oh,
that's
snap,
amazing.
Jackpot. Do you mind sharing what that question was that you asked?
No, of course. It's on the public records. It's been written about everywhere. So I basically had asked, because the way that press conferences work here, we get, and we call them a pool question. So a lot of the reporters who are there, we all huddle together and talk about what are the questions that we want to pose and how can we wrap these into the one question that we're actually given to ask. So it was multi-parted. There were two Canadians, their names are the Garretts, who were being held, false allegations of spying, and were released. But at the time they were being held. And so I asked about how Canada was pursuing closer ties with China and also balancing the fact that there had been kidnappings of booksellers from Hong Kong. There had been the detention of the Garretts, our own citizens, as well as the destabilizing effects of what they are doing currently in the South China Sea. And I guess combined, that really kind of hit a nerve and prompted this very, very sharp and surprising reaction from the Chinese foreign minister.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's up on YouTube.
Do you know what I should be YouTubing?
If you Google just my name, Amanda Connolly Journalist, we'll pull all of it up. The entire first page of search results.
Well, if you don't mind, I'd love to link that in the show notes page for the 88th episode as just something that the community can be aware of. That's really brave of you. And that's also really fascinating how you mentioned what it's like in the press room.
Yeah, it's tricky, of course, right? Because there are so many different outlets who are there. And of course, everybody has different interests and different areas of focus, whether it's trade or human rights, or I mean, take your pick, where there's so many things that you can, that are fascinating about the relationship. And some of them are good and some of them need a little bit of work. So it's always kind of a balance act in that regard too, right? To be able to kind of get the things that are going to matter most to our readers. But I think that that kind of also, again, it makes you kind of a better thinker and writer, and critical analysis kind of all comes together. And really, I find it translates over really well to when I'm thinking about other things as well. It's very helpful.
For me, in my perspective, I see it more as very team effort. And I'm sure there's a lot of reporters that they just want to ask their own specific questions themselves. And I'm sure a lot of times, maybe it's because I watch a lot of TV shows like Scandal and here in the US, I just imagine in the press room, they're just, hey, like just really being aggressive, trying to push their question in there. I mean, there's of course positive and negative, but for me, I'm like, I don't know if it's a common thing in Canada, but it sounds way more community oriented and driven rather than me, who's going to ask the standout question.
It definitely can be that. When you have situations with visiting diplomats that are more limited, you do get more of that. There is a lot of solidarity among the journalists who work here, and we all pretty much do have each other's backs, which is amazing. If you catch us in scrums, or I think you call them gaggles in the U.S., where you kind of all swarm around a politician and you're yelling your questions as they leave, you know, for example, a committee room, or if they're walking down the hallway, it is very aggressive. You have to be very tough and resilient to be able to do that and know to get in there and get your question heard and answered as well. So it's a balancing act.
That is so interesting. Just to tie it back to your story, how you were able to go from that reaction and then doing more research and finding out why is it some countries are way more supportive than others. And then that leading to the inspiration to your work in progress. So in terms of research, I'm assuming you're fully Caucasian.
I am, yes. I'm Irish-Canadian.
It is really interesting to me. What's your research like? And how do you feel when you approach diversity and voices and authenticities?
As I was researching the countries that had really been supportive to me, it kind of got me a lot more into looking at the traditions and the landscapes and all of the things that make them so unique and so fascinating. Of course, during that, as a white girl, it was a lot of really listening in and paying attention to discussions that were happening about diversity. Because last summer when I started writing, it was really when you were having a lot of this, I wouldn't say come to the forefront necessarily, because it's been going on for a while, but it certainly reached me in a way that it hadn't before and made me a lot more careful and wanting to be a lot more respectful in how I approached it, mainly in terms of things like, you know, spending time on different websites, looking at what are the stereotypes, how can I make sure that I'm avoiding those when I'm actually writing, because my world, it deals with an upper class and a lower class, really kind of wanting to stay away from any sort of stereotypings in terms of light skin is better or things like that that you see sometimes. That was a very, very conscious success for me and research to go through and really make sure that I was conscious of that. Even now through the revisions that I'm doing with my agent, it's very much kind of cognizant in all of the work that we're doing and making sure that we're not inadvertently putting in any kind of stereotypes that could be really hurtful just by lack of knowledge or things like that. And so it's been a pretty in-depth process for me just in terms of making sure that I'm aware of all that. In terms of storytelling, I mean, as a journalist, it has always been my job to tell stories that are not my own and to try and do them justice and to be respectful, even when there are people or perspectives that I either don't necessarily agree with or know that I can't fully understand. And trying to bring that to my writing and making sure that I am being as respectful and as sensitive as I would be if I were telling the story of somebody who was in the real world and who was a member of a community that I'm not part of is really something that has been guiding me from the get-go and looking for ways to tell a story that is honest and that is, again, not inadvertently doing any harm to people who could be harmed by me being irresponsible. And so that's been for me, it's been enjoyable to delve into that too and look at things through a different perspective. I'm lucky to have friends who are from a lot of different cultures and who bring a lot of their different experiences to the table when we're going out for drinks or when we're debating politics or issues like that. It's become natural in a way to be able to try and step outside of myself and say, I'm here and this is what I know and this is how I might see it, but here is where they're coming from. And they have an entirely different experience and a worldview that's been shaped by that. And I can never fully understand that, but I can try and I can listen. Really making sure that I apply that to my writing has been my strongest focus. And I hope I've done it justice. I'm really trying hard.
I'm really excited to hear more about it. How far along are you in your work in progress?
I got my agent with a finished draft of the story. And since I signed up with her, Christy Hunter from the Knight Agency, she's amazing. I can't speak highly enough of her. But since then, we've gone through, I think we're on about the fifth draft of this right now. So we did, I think, about 3 tip-to-toe rewrites. They were hard, but it really pushed me to understand the story a lot more than I did. Now, the past couple of rounds have really been polishing and going through for point of view and making sure that it's showing, not telling. Because coming from a journalism day job, you are always telling. You're rarely allowed to kind of add that color in and add that showing aspect of it. So the switch can sometimes be a little bit tricky. And so that's where we are now. I'm hoping to have our final round of revisions done in the next couple of weeks. I think we're talking about titles. We're talking about, you know, changes to, and I did a synopsis and then kind of potential outlines for if I were to ever be lucky enough to sell it as a series and that kind of stuff. It's been really fun. It's really exciting and it's taken a while. I signed in end of August with her, August 2016. We're just finishing up our edits now. So it's been a little while, but it's been so amazing and she's been so supportive. It's been such an incredible experience to get to go through that and test myself and push myself to make it better.
I am so excited for you, Amanda. That's really, really awesome news. Honestly, I don't even think that's that long from August of 2016 till now. I think you're being hard on yourself. I think you're doing an awesome job. Since you've been working diligently on this, what do you find works best for you to keep productive with your work in progress to make sure that you don't fall back?
You know, I think I definitely work best in longer spurts because I work full-time during the week. I will often come home and write for a couple of hours in the evening, but depending if it's been a long day or if it's been, there are things happening that I can't give my full devotion to writing, a lot of it ends up happening on the weekends. And so it'll be like a 10 a.m. to 11 o'clock or midnight writing day and just really powering through and trying to get as much done as possible. And when you come from a background like journalism, like writer's block, I think is real. It can be very difficult. But again, coming from a very deadline focused environment where not feeling inspired is not an excuse to miss a deadline when they've built time into a show for you. It really does force you to learn how to produce even when you don't want to produce. You might be writing something that is absolutely horrible. And I have definitely done that. Where I've just kind of put the words down and get them on the page and get to the next scene or the next cookie moment, as Susan Dennard calls them. Having that always looking forward perspective and always just barreling right through really for me is helpful. Taking the approach that even if I don't want to do it, I'm going to do it. I'm going to sit down and just make myself get to the next page or get to the next scene or whatever else it is. Usually I do a lot of Pinterest plotting, inspiration boards and playlists, things like that. Having that to fall back on as well, whether it's kind of visualizing a scene in my head or picturing what would be playing for me to set the piece to that I'm not maybe feeling inspired to write is really, really helpful as well. And then of course, just being accountable to my friends who are always asking, you know, how it's going, and to people in the industry who know I have an agent and who know I'm writing and who want to know, you know, more about what's happening. I think being open and sharing that really forces you to, for lack of losing faith, you want to make sure that you're actually working. So if things don't happen, which is a very real possibility, at least you can say, I have given this everything that I have. If it fails, it's not for lack of trying, or it's not because it's going to haunt me at night because I know I didn't do my best. I want to be able to say, I gave this absolutely everything that I have. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, and I move on to the next thing. But at least I know personally for myself that I have put everything of myself into this project.
That was very inspiring. I think that would really help listeners listening in. I'm sure that those words would really pick them up as well if they're like running into like a little bit of a wall, as most of us writers
so
experience. Really does help. So thank you for that. What do you hope that your book will accomplish, whether it's for you and or your future readers?
I think in terms of wildest dreams, I guess the overarching motif or the kind of theme of this really is the fact that, you know, being hopeful and wanting to fight for change, especially in a tough environment, takes so much courage and so much bravery to be able to take a risk and to put yourself out there and do what you are passionate about and what you think is right. So I guess kind of my ultimate dream would be that that is something that would resonate with any future readers, and especially kind of in the current climate that we're in right now in terms of politics. And it's such a toxic environment, and it really wears you down. It takes a toll. Whatever side of the spectrum that you're on, it's very divisive and very caustic in a way as well. So that would really be the goal, is to inspire and to make people realize that there really is no kind of braver act than hoping and letting yourself kind of dare to dream of what could be and fighting for that kind of better world. For me personally as well, I think it's wanting to see my words on the page and knowing that if I'm not writing on the computer, I'll get kind of random ideas in my head and write them down on the app in my phone or a little piece of napkin. Like they have to come out. And so seeing them kind of put together in a way that makes sense to me and that kind of comes closer to, I guess, matching the book that I have in my head or the story that's in my head at least, is something that is kind of constantly really, really validating to get closer and closer to and see it kind of start to match up more to that kind of dream book vision, I guess you could say. So I think that would be the goal. And of course, to actually maybe one day hold it in my hands would be also a dream, but that's...
I'm so excited for you for this journey. And before we wrap it up, could you please tell the listeners, our community, where they can find you and say hi to you, whether it's on Twitter, checking out your website, Instagram?
Of course, yeah. So all of my social media handles are the exact same one. It's at @AmandaConn. So it's two C's and then two N's. And that's right the way across, you know, Twitter, Pinterest, Spotify, Instagram. It's kind of all the same ones there. So that's the easiest way to find me. And of course, I'm on the Facebook group that you have that is so inspiring and so amazing to be a part of. Thank you for putting this together and building this kind of community that we have. It's so amazing to have a sounding board and a place to find people who also are equally as passionate about writing and all of the things that we all love so much. It's fantastic.
That was so eye-opening, and many thanks to Amanda for bringing us behind the scenes of her journalism work and how her experiences shaped the storyline of her work in progress. Next up, we have Christy Mauna. Christy, how are you? Thank you so much for being on the show.
Hi, thank you. I'm so excited to be on here.
I'm so excited to dive in and for the rest of our community to learn more about you and your story that you're working on. How did you first fall in love with writing?
I guess through reading when I was growing up. I grew up in Midwest suburbia. Reading was just kind of my way to travel and expand my imagination. When I wanted to escape, I would write my own little stories for school. We did a lot of writing back then. I would just write and write.
Was there one fiction that changed your life and you're like, oh my gosh, I want to be like this author, or whoa, this author just blew my mind and she or he is my idol? Do you remember if there was that one book?
It was A Series of Unfortunate Events for me.
Nice.
I didn't read Harry Potter when I was younger, but it was A Series of Unfortunate Events for me. Just that world and the twist. I was like, I want to do that. I want to be able to like just take one idea and keep on moving and make it into this whole other world. So I really love that.
Growing up with your family, was writing and reading really encouraged? Was that something that was a priority growing up, or was that more so a leisure or a hobby or like a hidden secret for you?
It was more like a hobby. My mom, she's definitely a reader, but everyone else in my family isn't as much. Definitely just a hobby for me.
I love that it turned from a hobby to now something more serious where you're really committed. In our private Facebook group, you're jumping in consistently, updating us about your progress and your work. And I love seeing that. I love that you're so proactive about taking control of where you want your career to go, where you want your writing dreams to go. I think that says a lot. I would love for the rest of our community to know what you're working on right now.
I'm working on what I wrote for NaNoWriMo back in November. And it's called Worlds in Collision. It's young adult contemporary, and it's about a girl named Marielle who is ultimately trying to find her way out of her grief after suddenly losing her father. I like to think of it as a long love letter to my family and friends, since it's kind of based on something that happened in my own life. It's really important to me and I'm really excited about it.
Do you mind diving in a little bit more about that inspiration?
I lost my father last May and it was very sudden and it took us all by surprise. When he passed away, I was still writing. It's always been a hobby of mine. I went through a really dark stage in my life where I just didn't know what to do. I was kind of in a rut. Nothing was inspiring me to do anything or even like get up and do stuff during the day. I like to think of that time as my dark days. I always tell people I started writing in my journal, all my emotions out. I would write letters. I would address them to my father and just get it all out. And then when NaNoWriMo came up, it just was the perfect timing for me because I would look back at all the work I did and I felt alone at the time. I just wanted to share with other people what I went through and what my mindset was at during that time, because writing is all I know to express myself. So I kind of just gathered up my journal and put so much into my character's life that's from my own. It's really hard to write sometimes. I go back to those times when I was really deep in my grief, and having to pull her out of it has been really relieving for me. It was really therapeutic that I got to do that. So that's why this book means so much to me.
I know you mentioned that writing the stories was therapeutic. So at the time when you're writing the letters to your dad, was it more of closure? How was your relationship with your dad? It's interesting how everybody deals with grief. A lot of times it's like, do we have the fullest relationship? Do we feel fulfilled with the time that we've had? Just observing also really close friends and their parents passing. One friend would be more at peace because she had closure with her parent. Another one, it's going to be a tougher journey for healing because they never really had that closure when the parent was alive. Which direction was that for you?
I definitely needed closure. The letters were definitely more for me because I didn't have the best relationship with my father. We hadn't spoken for about 2 years. Once he passed away, I learned so much about him that I thought I knew this person, but I really didn't. And learning more about him taught me more about myself. I still needed that closure when I would write these letters. Sometimes it'd just be me asking questions and having to let it out of me. I know I may not ever know the answers to some of these questions. I just helped to just get it down. I found a way to, by writing it out and reading it, I found a way to accept it and find peace within myself after so many months. That's definitely how it worked for me.
I love that. It's interesting, right? When you are able to bring that and integrate it into your story that you're working on, it's almost like you couldn't find answers in real life, but through your own work, you create answers for yourself. And that is very, very healing in the grieving process. Right now, working on it, what has been your most difficult scene that you've had to deal with?
I recently had almost a breakdown, and I was trying to talk to all my friends about it because I was writing a scene where my character has this conversation with her brother, and all of it comes out where she's telling him she's deep in this grief, and grief changes you, obviously. And she doesn't know if she likes the person she is now. And it's just, it's hard for me to write that because it was hard for myself to accept that I'm a new person. After that scene, I just definitely had to decompress and step away from it for a while. That was definitely a hard scene when she's deep into her depression and isn't sure she's ready to come out yet.
Do you feel you'll be coming across more of that level of difficulty?
Yeah, for sure. Because my book is separated by seasons. I have fall, winter, spring, and summer. And I'm in winter right now during my editing process. And this whole season is really difficult to write. Going back to write it now, it's hard, but then it's also, wow, I've come a long way since then. And just seeing my character, I'm like, oh, wow.
What's so amazing is your story. It seems like there's a lot of these difficult scenes, like we just mentioned, that will be coming up again and again because of the seasons as well. What do you find so far has worked best for you in pushing forward?
Definitely just free writing it. That's all I can say. Keep on writing. Like, I usually write at night once, like, my kids are in bed and everything. So I just put my headphones on, and I have a bunch of Spotify playlists. I just tune out everything, and I just keep writing. That's all I can do because it's really tough, but the only way I can get it done.
Do you find that having writing challenges like NaNoWriMo do really help you in your writing process, or do you feel like you can do without it?
Both. Sometimes I like having that, oh, I need to get this much done in this amount of time. But then sometimes I like the freedom of just keeping my own schedule, that sort of things. I like both.
Okay, I feel you. I think I'm the same way. And Christy, I would really love to know, what do you hope to achieve with your story? I know you also mentioned about your Filipina background.
Definitely about bringing diversity into YNA. And then I just hope my book finds a place in someone's life. Because when I was a teenager, it was definitely hard. Teenagers feel alone a lot of the times, especially right now. And I just really hope it finds a place somewhere where if someone's feeling alone, that they know that they aren't alone.
How are you along your process? Are you looking for a literary agent? How's that going for you?
I have no idea where to start. I'm not really even sure if I want to go that route. I've been looking into self-publishing.
Ooh, okay.
I think for this book, I might do that and see what happens after that.
Amazing. I would love to wrap it up with a big question is, what is the proudest moment that you've had so far in your life and your career?
I think it was finishing this story because it was so hard for me to write. I was super proud of myself. I wrote everyone I knew. I'm like, I finished. I did it.
That's amazing.
I have a great support system. So everyone was really supportive of it. So I was really excited.
That's so awesome. Our community definitely is very supportive as well. And I've seen that when you check in and people are like, yeah, go. Like, it is so important to have that support around you, whether it's an online writing community or an actual workshop that you go to or friends and family. It's just nice to have that, just to have those cheerleaders along the way. Just makes it so much more doable and just way more exciting too. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited for you. I can't wait to see what happens and to check in with you again later down the line. And Christy, let me know if there's anything you'd love for us to know, if you want us to check out your blog, because I know you have a blog. And also let us know where we can find you on social media to say hi.
My blog is simplynicolette.com.
And can you let us know what you blog about?
I blog about mainly a lot of book reviews and my life in being in my 20s and being a young mom, just everything in between. There's some TV shows I talk about all the time. Anything I'm feeling up to. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. It's the same handle. It's Chris M. It's K-R-I-S-S-S-S-M.
Oh my gosh, how many S's are there?
Four S's.
Amazing. Christy, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I love being a part of this community.
Thank you for being so transparent with your stories, Christy. We have Megan LaCroix up next. We have Megan LaCroix with us. She's been with our podcast almost since the beginning, right, Megan?
It was actually one of the things on my to-do list for this year when about New Year's resolutions, which I don't normally do. I love a lot of things like podcasts and books, but I feel in order to really support those things, you have to love them out loud. You have to tell the people that you admire their work and be vocal about it and tell your friends and everything. Because I think sometimes we share things, but we do it a little too close. We don't actually scream it out and give reviews for things that we love. It almost seems like people are more typical to give a review for something they don't like as opposed to something they do. I love 88 Cups and I will tell anybody about it.
I just want you to know that we see this and we notice these things and it means so much to us. Thank you so much. I am very grateful to you and I admire you as well. I'm very excited to jump into your story. You had one of the most powerful stories to share. Before we get into that, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you fell in love with writing?
I had always been a creative kid. I was always making up stories and acting out plays. I have a cousin I'm very close to, and we would get my sisters who are a little younger, and every time we would see him, we would get together and put on haunted houses for our family members to go through. We would always play Thriller. And we got in trouble so many times because we'd take my mom's invisible thread and basically booby trap a room and have our parents tripping over these wires. We were so into the production of it and trying to scare people, which is hilarious because I am the biggest chicken. I will not watch horror movies.
Me too.
No, thank you. People are talking about the Stephen King It trailer right now.
Oh, hell
and I'm
no,
like,
I
don't
can't.
Even want to see the trailer.
Me neither.
No. My imagination is far too wild to be scared. In terms of writing specifically, I think it really started to come about in the fifth grade. A teacher had given me, she knew I liked horses a lot. Like I was a horse obsessed kid. And so she steered me toward a copy of The Black Stallion by Walter Farley. And I became very into that world and the stories and everything. When I was in middle school, I went to a very small school. So we had the same teachers for all three of those years. My English teacher was very much into creative writing. We did a lot of creative writing in class. And basically all my stories were a complete ripoff of The Black Stallion. It was fan fiction before there was fan fiction. I found it recently. I read through the first page. It wasn't as horrible as I imagined it would be, but there's zero formatting. I don't know how my teacher read this. And then I did some creative writing in high school, a little bit in college, but I was one of those people, like, I think in my mind, I want to be an author, but I did not realize at the time that I could study that in school. I thought it was almost like a hobby. I didn't pursue it seriously at the time. It just didn't occur to me that that was something that you could work at and get better at. I think I was one of those people that very naively thought it was something you had or you didn't have, and it wasn't a skill that could be refined and developed. I think a lot of people think that. They look at authors, so easy to compare your drafts that you're writing on your computer to published books that have been through God knows how many drafts or how many books that people have written before they got to that one. I just thought, oh, it's not something you could go to school for and study and everything, which I have completely flipped my idea on that. I realize so much more now what a puzzle piece a story is. And it's not just scene after scene. Everything has to fit together. Everything that you put in there has to have multiple reasons for being there. Every scene has to drive the story forward. I am definitely going to be a lifelong student of the craft. I don't think you can ever stop.
It's very true. I think once it's in you, it's always going to be in you. What are you most excited about right now?
I have a couple of works in progress that I'm just jotting scene ideas down, and they're not really stories yet. But my main focus right now is my young adult fantasy novel, Hinterland. That was chosen for Pitch Wars this last fall. I am still in revisions with it. I did not get my revisions done in time to actually take part in the agent round, because even though I had very good feedback on the book, I realized that there was a lot I wanted to change, and that if I was going to go back to agents with it, some of the agents that I would be querying would be a second time, or I had pulled the manuscript from them initially when I got into the contest. So I really want to make the most of my second chance. So I have been revising the story from all the feedback that I have gotten. It's an epic fantasy. It's about a teenage girl who has ever-changing tattoos on her body. They're prophetic. She has to travel through an enchanted forest called the Hinterland in order to save her town from a force that has reversed the clocks and is stealing the life force from her town. It's really simple. That was my goal with it, was to make an epic fantasy that was more simple. I don't have crazy names in it. Everything's easy to pronounce. I just wanted it to be very accessible, and it was the way the story came to me. I wanted it to be small, even though it is an epic scale in the terms of the challenge that she faces.
What age group are you hoping to share your story with?
It would definitely be young adult, the higher end of the range, so maybe a 14 to 18. The revisions are hard. A lot of it is rewriting, because I really wanted to rewrite it in terms to make it strictly standalone and very obviously a standalone. And then if anybody's interested in expanding on that, we can talk. I wanted it to be a full arc in that first book.
What do you feel like you've been doing that works best for you in terms of productivity and keeping your work in progress going?
I'm very regimented. I write, if I can, at the same time every day. I get up before my kids wake up. So I am up at 5 or 6 and I write for a few hours. Usually I get some more time in the afternoon. I try to keep myself to a schedule. I will do social media stuff at this time. I will try to write a blog post here. But this chunk of time belongs to the story. And then I think the other big thing is just, for me anyway, was getting involved in creating relationships with other writers. This story really is my first book in terms of something that I knew I was going to see through from the beginning. I wrote the first draft of it in a vacuum. I mean, I would talk to my husband here and there about things, but he's not a writer. It was more like me venting about things, not so much talking plot problems or whatever. I didn't really know any writers. And then I did have a very good friend from high school that ended up being a very good critique partner for me. And she really pushed me toward, you should get on Twitter. There's a huge writing community on Twitter. And I was, oh, I don't know if I'm cool enough for that. Once I got on Twitter and I figured it out, the big thing for me was, before Pitch Wars, I had entered this same manuscript in Pitch Madness and got into that. And once I got into the pitch hashtags and following them and getting into the competition and everything, it really brought up all the people out of the woodwork where I was, oh, we have something to talk about because we're all going after these spots in this pitch competition or whatever. And I still keep in touch with people that were like on my team for Pitch Madness and everything. It was a great icebreaker. Otherwise, it can be scary. You get on there, you have no followers, and you're like, I don't know who to talk to. And you yeah. don't know. Jack. It was an immensely wonderful way to break the ice. It's like dating in the sense that you can like a person, you don't really jive style-wise when it comes to critiquing or the genre that you write or the category. And even though I think it's great to have people as critique partners who are also outside your genre and category, you really need, for me anyway, there's a big difference between people I know that write YA fantasy. Oh, we talk about the same books that we read and the same problems and the tropes, and it's almost a closer relationship. But that really changes things in terms of accountability. People that I check in with are great CPs that I have that I will meet up with at night, and we'll do word sprints, text them questions any time of the day and being, oh, this chapter, it's killing me. And they'll be like, okay, how can I help? It just takes you out of your writer's box, which I think is easy to stay in. And when you have a community, it's so much easier to keep going. And it also gives you the accountability, not that I would ever give up, but you can't give up once you're telling people you're going to do something. You got to stick with it. There's a huge amount of accountability. If you put it out in the universe, this is what I'm doing. It puts a good amount of pressure on yourself to be like, listen, this is my goal. This is what I want. And I've got to work at it.
Hearing how you've really thrown yourself in this world, you made a commitment to stay regimented, have structure, and be disciplined with your craft to improve yourself and to also have a community. That's inspiring. And are you comfortable with sharing, starting back in 2007, what happened and kind of leading into that story?
I'm definitely comfortable with it. There was a long time where I didn't talk too much about it, but I think it's very important. And I'm past the stage of keeping it a secret. Back in 2007, which is kind of funny that we're talking about it right now, this is around my anniversary of getting sick, I contracted an unknown virus. So the doctors were never able to pinpoint what it was. It was a virus that resulted in brain encephalopathy. It attacked my brain, leading up to being hospitalized. The few days before, I was extremely anxious and doing really weird things. I would come home from work and tell my husband I felt like I didn't know who he was. And he was like, okay, this is weird. And then I think I didn't sleep that night. So he actually called in to work for me. We went to the doctor and she was like, oh, it's just stress. Here's a heart rate monitor to wear home. We'll look at this tomorrow. So we went home and he said, I don't remember any of this. I'm telling the story when I say he said, I went home immediately. As soon as I got home, I ripped the monitor off and threw it in the trash and said I didn't need it. And he's like, you would never do that. Something is really wrong. He had to go somewhere for work. He had a small business at the time. He brought me with him because he was too afraid of me being home. And during that time, I had my first grand mal seizure, which is a very bad seizure where you stop breathing and everything. They had brought me to the small hospital in the town where we were. Thankfully, the people that I worked for, my boss's wife was a doctor. Darren, my husband, was talking to her and she was like, get her to Mass General, which is a huge hospital in Boston right now. They're experts and something really weird is happening. So I was transferred there. Nothing that they were doing was helping anything, but I was having status epilepticus after a while, which is basically, it's either when seizures last too long or when they occur very close together. So your body basically doesn't have any time to recover between them. So it's very deadly. Your heart is going at a marathon rate. They ended up doing all these tests. They had to do a brain biopsy where they went in and took a little piece out. If I forget where I put my keys, I'm like, I can't be held responsible. They took part of my brain out since they had to intubate me for the surgery. They decided that they were going to try to do what's called coma therapy. So they basically keep you in a coma, hoping that your body resets itself. It was supposed to last 24 or 48 hours, but then the status epilepticus, every time they tried to bring me out, it was ridiculous. So they couldn't do that. And then eventually I had to have the tracheotomy. I ended up being in the coma for 5 weeks before I woke up on my own. When I woke up, lots of weird things in terms of hallucinations would happen. One really strange thing was that I remember not being able to really hear the radio on. I couldn't understand anybody. The only person that I could hear and understand was my husband. We joke because he talks very loud, but I know that part of it was just our connection. And I didn't really even remember him when I woke up. I just knew that he was somebody very important to me. I thought he was a nurse because he was taking such good care of me. He basically quit and just sat there for 3 months in the hospital. My employer at the time was completely amazing. They paid me. They took so much care of me. We had amazing health insurance, which is such a blessing because otherwise I'd be paying for it until the day I died. I was so angry that everything was messed up and that this had happened once I did wake up. It did fuel me. It was a long recovery. And I guess I was so focused in the beginning on recovery. I was so focused on getting back to quote unquote normal that I didn't really talk about it. They know that it was a virus in terms of the symptoms that I had. I am not to this day epileptic. My husband prodded me. He's like, you've always wanted to do writing. Why don't you think about quitting and starting to write full time, which is not great advice. Financially, we could handle it. Obviously, things are going to be a lot tighter without two incomes. But he's like, I really think that you should try to do this. At the time, we did not have children yet. And he's like, I want you to be able to explore this before we have a baby.
Darren is amazing.
Oh, he is. Yes. Very amazing. So I did that. I very nervously quit my job. It was a small company, but I got to see the owners being very passionate about what they did. I wanted to have that for my personal journey. I started writing something. It didn't really click. I wrote a good amount. I ended up getting pregnant a year later. And then 2 or 3 weeks, it was very close because my daughter was born 5 weeks early, I started on Hinterland. And the reason that I started on it, I was going through all this old stuff on my computer and I had writing exercises to myself. And I found this one that I had written in 2005 before I had gotten sick. And it actually ended up becoming the basis for one of the later chapters in the book. It took me a really long time because then we had another daughter 17 months later, but it taught me to be regimented.
Oh, that's amazing. Megan, I have a question. When you mentioned when you write your stories, especially in the beginning after you recovered or on the way through recovery, do you feel there's subconscious thoughts that come out of you, pieces that you may not have remembered before the virus?
Yeah, I definitely feel it changed my writing. I'm a lot older now. You try to be like, okay, is this the virus? Or is this the ordeal that I went through? Or is it growing as a person? The initial thing that I started writing, I look back on it now and it had a lot of pieces that were subconsciously coming from what had happened to me. In terms of writing, the real scary thing was, well, first of all, I couldn't write. I didn't even know the alphabet. Writing stories was part of my life. So when I literally could not remember the alphabet, I was like, oh my God, how is this ever going to be part of my life again? I was very afraid that maybe I would have lost my imagination. And so that was one of the big things that sparked me to write Hinterlands, because the story I had started before that was a historical 1920s, because I love that era, murder mystery. But then I was getting into it and I'm like, oh, I just want to write magic. Initially, I was so afraid that I didn't have that level of imagination anymore. When I started Hinterland, that was my goal, to stretch my imagination, see what kind of wonderful, imaginative, crazy things that I could come up with. This book, when I look back on it, is basically a love letter to my imagination. One of my impetus for it was that I just wanted to see what I could do.
Megan, you are so inspiring.
Oh,
I'm in such awe. You have no idea. Thank you for walking through that. I know our community is going to really appreciate that too. Is there any advice that you want to share?
The two main things that I would say is that you are the only one who can tell your story. And so don't stress about the path and how long it is for you to get from A to B, because I think it takes time. They talk about voice a lot. And that takes a lot of time to develop. It gets easier once you find your niche and the way that you say things and the way that your character would say them. And you're writing from the point of view of the person that you're creating too. Sometimes they don't always think of things the way that you would. Like I did in the beginning, I fell into a trap when I first started writing of trying to emulate writers that I admired. And I think that's super great for practice, but eventually you have to get to the point where you're writing from your own lens. When you see a story blurb, when people do the pitch contest online where they have the 140 characters to do a pitch of their story, you could take any of those pitches and give it to 100 different writers and you would get 100 vastly different versions of a story, even though they all started with the same log line. I think that proof of how unique each one of us is. And then I think I had touched on it before, but really find your tribe and find people that you connect with. Even if you have supportive spouse like I do, or family members that are very supportive, no one is really going to get you like another writer. Like I'll say all these things to my husband, like, oh, MC, POV. He's like, I don't know what the heck you're talking about. You need writers. I feel we all go through the same range of emotions and we love our work. We hate our work. You just need to have people on your side that understand that. And it also clarifies to you that, oh, wow, I thought I was not good enough. But you realize this is just a normal emotional response to being creative. If you have people in your corner that understand you and rooting you on, it just makes a huge amount of difference. the road to publication is so bumpy. It's not just that for people who are aspiring toward publication. Every book is different and every process that you go through to get there is going to present a new challenge.
And to wrap up, please let us know where we can find you on Twitter.
On Twitter, I'm at Megan K. LaCroix, LACROIX, like X-ray. I have a website called Megan Write Now, like writing. I love chatting with authors and I try to be inspiring there. So come by if you need a boost.
Megan, you've been so awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Wow. Megan's journey and her perseverance is so incredibly inspiring. Thank you for going into all the details, Megan. Next up, we have Kat Cho. How did you fall in love with writing?
This is my inaugural podcast moment.
Yes.
How did I fall in love with writing? I can't really think of a time that I wasn't telling stories. My sister, who's older, these really funny anecdotes that she tells from when we were little kids. One of her favorite ones to tell is that she would sometimes get out of bed to go to the bathroom and get a drink of water, and she would have to walk by my room. And she would hear me in there and she would walk up to my door and look inside and I would just be sitting up in bed with my stuffed animals making plays. I don't know what kind of stories I was making. That's probably the first storytelling experience I had.
That's so cute. It almost sounds also you're directing too and acting. Has that ever been an intriguing thought for you to segue even into screenwriting? Or even to the in the production side of things in film and TV?
For a while when I was younger, I was definitely more into television and film. I was very visual in my stories, which is probably why I like to act it out with my stuffed animals. I'm going to bring up my sister again. I think that she saw that I really love the idea of stories and she introduced me to the idea of writing them down. I used to love my picture books and when they would end, I would get really sad. So sad that these characters weren't with me anymore. Being the amazing older sister she was, she would write sequels for me.
What?
Yeah, she would write sequels. I can remember the book so well. It was called The Baby Unicorn. There is a sequel to it. It's called Baby Unicorn and Baby Dragon. I was so upset. Why would you only write two and then just stop? My sister was like, well, I can just fix this. And she would just write me sequels to Baby Unicorn and Baby Dragon. She would let me illustrate if I wanted to. That was my first published book.
That's so cute. First of all, what's your sister's name?
My sister's name is Jenny Magera. She's married. That's why we have different last names.
Is she also a writer?
So I like to think that I have an interesting life. I'm very proud of the life I live. But my sister has some stories that can definitely one-up mine to the point where I'm almost more proud of her stories. She's just this amazing person. Everything she does so well. And she started off as a teacher and then began integrating technology in her classroom. And then Apple noticed and was like, do you want to do some consultation for us? And then Google was like, oh, you want to do some consultation for us? And then she created her own position at the Chicago Public School System where she integrated technology into multiple different schools across CPS. And now she's a chief technology officer.
Your sister's so cool.
She does actually have a book because she was approached to write a book about incorporating technology into the classroom.
How funny is that? It's full circle, but instead of the creativity side, she still has a book, but now segueing to something that she's always had a strength in as well. How does she feel about you diving into your dreams? And like, I guess she kind of almost feels she saw it coming the whole time.
I would say that my sister probably knows me better than I know myself, which is so nice to have that. She's so supportive of what I do. Her being older and her being so successful in what she does, you would think that she wouldn't need to ask me for my help or opinion. But
yeah.
I was already writing by the time she was approached to write her book. And so she came to me.
What?
And she said, what steps do you take when you're writing a book from scratch? And I was like, oh, you really want me to tell you all the nitty gritty details? She was like, of course. And so I beta read her book. We went through all those steps that anyone listening who is a writer themselves probably would recognize. We were critique partners and we went through a lot of revisions. When she got her line edits, she showed them to me. It was almost more fun because it was so exciting for me without any of that stress and fear that I'm sure comes when it's your book. Older sister yet again gave me something in my life that I didn't know I even wanted yet. And a sneak peek into this industry, right?
Oh my God, I love how close you guys are. What's your age difference?
We're 2 years apart.
And I love this relationship that you have with your sister. And I think that is so beautiful. And it's so amazing that even though she is your older sister, you have inspired her and helped her along too. When did you realize that being an author can be an actual career?
So my cousin, who is amazing and actually also has a book coming out.
What?
I'm going to do a plug here. Her name's Axie O, and her book is Rebel Soul, coming out this year in fall. So she was already writing. I wrote books on and off. I wrote fan fiction, and I wrote weird little chapter books and mystery novels when I was preteen teenager. And then I was like, I need to be serious. I went to college. I thought I was going to go to medical school. But then I was an adult and I had a weird dream. It was so vivid. It was watching a movie. At that point, I knew that my cousin Axie was already revising this manuscript that she had written when she was in college and querying it. And I said to her, oh, you know, you really want to be a writer. And I had this really cool dream. And do you think you'd want the idea? And she said, well, it's your dream. You write it. If you think it's a story, then it's because you already see it as a story. So why don't you try writing it? And I was like, no, I can never do that. And then I wrote it in 19 days. I pantsed the bejesus out of that story. I wrote over 100,000 words in 19 days.
How the hell is that even possible?
It was so bad. Every time I hit a milestone, 5,000, 10,000 words, I would message her about it. Thinking about it as like a more serious writer, I'm like, oh, what a jerk I was. She's writing her story and she's taking it seriously and she's gonna query this book. And I'm another 5,000, another 10,000. I'm doing so great. And she's probably like, what are you even doing right now? But I'm so lucky because she's just the nicest person you will ever meet and never yelled at me for doing that. She read those horrible first drafts.
Now that is an amazing family member right there.
After I finished it, I was like, that was so much fun. And she's like, so what do you think? And I was like, I don't know. I said, no one would ever want to read it. And she said, if you want other people to read it, then why don't you ask people? She told me about critique partners. She told me about online forums, what querying means, Wattpad, and all those things that you could use. I think she told me about Figment. I looked into all of them. And the more I did, the more excited I got. It was just so nice of her because writing for her wasn't just a hobby. This is something that she wanted to do for her career. And here I was. So what do you think about this? What do you think about this? And it's probably like such a noob question. She was so patient with me. I don't think I would have been so comfortable so immediately if I hadn't had her hold my hand. Now, being a little bit on the other side, I really love doing that for other people because I would want someone to have just as easy of a transition as I had. If I could give that to somebody else, I think that would be really nice.
You definitely do, because I see how active you are with your own community, because you got a lot going on with your Twitter. And I can see how you jump in also in our Facebook groups whenever you can. You do give really great advice and you just jump in with your thoughts. It's clear that you do have that instilled in you. And many thanks to your cousin for instilling that in you as well and you passing it forward. That's a beautiful cycle. And I would love for you to give us a snapshot of your work in progress.
I guess I have two. The one that's more complete is the one that I got my agent with. When I first started writing, I didn't know exactly what my style was going to be. As I wrote more, I started incorporating more of my Korean culture. My first book, which I got my agent with, is a contemporary young adult fantasy. It draws inspiration from a lot of different myths, but the main one is of the Gumiho. A Gumiho is a fox that's lived for 1,000 years, and they've gained enough energy at that point to live forever. In order to continue to live forever, they have to prey on humans, specifically men. Fox has 9 tails. 9 is a very symbolic number in Korean and lots of East Asian cultures, and she can morph into a very beautiful woman. In the Japanese myth, it could be a man or a woman, but in Korean, it's a woman only. Some myths, she eats a man's heart, and some myths, she eats a man's liver in order to live forever. My main character is a Gumiho. She's a teenager, and she has a lot of guilt about it.
Oh, she's so sweet.
The old myths, it's a lot like these travelers come across this single cabin in the mountains, and that's where the Gumiho is, and then she preys on the travelers. And I thought to myself, well, that makes sense, because who will miss that guy? You know, he's traveling across the mountains and people disappear all the time in the 16th century. Now in the 21st century with globalization and cars and trains, and no one's really traveling across the country on foot, I would imagine that a Gumiho would have to be where the people are. So she lives in Seoul, which is the most densely populated city in Korea. And so she lives among her victims. It gives her this crisis of conscience. I eat these people, but I live among them and I know that their stories and I know their lives, and how do I reconcile those two things? And then, of course, she has to fall in love with someone who finds out her secret, and that just adds another wrench in the whole thing.
Oh my gosh, she falls in love with her dinner.
She falls in love with her dinner. It was really fun to write. It was a lot of those stories that came out 10 years ago was always the paranormal, or the creature was usually the guy, Edward and Twilight, and the things like that. Like, no, the girl's more powerful for sure.
This is such an exciting summary that you just shared with us. How long did it take for the research process itself?
When I was younger, my parents did try to teach us about our Korean roots, like folktales. They bought us like a little kid's book that had a bunch of different folktales in them, and there were fox stories in there. But the idea of the gumiho came back to me when I got more into Korean dramas. I love it when the girl is the powerful one. The thing is, I don't think that my boy character is weak. I just think that this story isn't about him. So then I looked into all of the origins of the myth, and they actually kind of made me sad, because there's like so many of them are just, yeah, she's just evil. She's just a bad person. Let's blame all the bad things on her. She's too beautiful. So when men cheat on their wives, it's obviously her fault. And I was like, excuse me, old dead Korean dudes. It just made me so mad. What really got me was that I found this one much older story where it was about this strong, benevolent fox spirit that helped this Buddhist monk find enlightenment. And I was like, see, she wasn't always bad. She's just misunderstood.
Yep.
And I was like, and I'm going to prove it to you. I used a lot of that in the story, just talking to my grandmother in Korean grandmother's hanmonese. So I've talked to both of my hanmonese. I talked to them a little bit about it. And then I was really lucky, because over the course of this idea, like percolating in my head, I've had multiple opportunities to go back to visit family in Korea. Going back there, it's just the ultimate inspiration. If anyone's ever thinking of traveling to East Asia, I would say make Seoul one of your stops.
I would love to go. I was talking about it with Moonlin. We've been to many parts of Asia. We were actually going to stop by Seoul last year. We ended up not having enough time. I hope that Seoul is going to be on my list one day.
I know that not everyone can go to the place they're writing about, especially if it's not local. It was just so amazing for me. And it's an experience that I think really helped me power through and make the book exactly what I knew it could be. I don't think it would be what it is now if I hadn't been able to go there. My second book is also set in Seoul, contemporary fantasy. And so I'm going to go to Seoul again this spring, again to see my hanmoni. And I'm like, I better get started writing this book so I can be writing it while I'm there. This is my process now. I'm going to be that weird, quirky author who has to go to Seoul all the time to write her book.
Hey, why not? It's research, you know what I'm saying? So you have those two stories. Are you able to share a little bit about your second story?
I can. I'm not being told not to. And I've shared some aesthetic board, things like that on Pinterest, on Twitter. That's what I love so much about social media, is that there's so many forms of sharing your inspiration, your stories, that I get so addicted to all of it. So my second story, speaking of K-dramas, it's actually inspired a little bit by that K-drama Gung. I think it came out in like early 2000s. And the idea was, way back when, Korea had a monarchy, and that was lost in the early 20th century. And Gung is if the monarchy had never ended. They still have a king and a queen and princesses and princes. And so, like, what would the country be like if that was the case? It was such a fun alternate reality story. Again, very addictive because it's a Korean drama. But then I started thinking, how did it survive? We lost it because of war. What was the reason why it survived? And my thought was, well, of course, they had to have gained some kind of power that let them push out all invaders. And that power should be a dragon.
Oh, I like that.
Korean dragons are more similar to Chinese dragons, but a long snake-like body. They don't have wings, and they still fly, but they don't have wings. And they're closely connected with water. And in Korean myth, I don't know if this exists in Chinese myth, but there's this type of dragon stone that is associated with the dragon. So if you have the dragon stone, you can control them. I don't know if you ever saw that anime, Dragon Ball Z.
Oh my gosh. I used to watch it while I was quote unquote babysitting my sisters, but really I was just watching with them. And meanwhile, I'm like 10 years older than them. Like including Powerpuff Girls as well. Because it was I think it was back to back on Cartoon Network last time. Okay, I get it. Yes.
In that show, they have the Dragon Balls, right?
Yes.
And then you can summon the dragon. And I always imagine that that's what it comes from. The myth of the Dragonstone, that's old, super old myth from East Asian culture. And I was like, oh, anime is so historically accurate. So in my story, the princess at the time, when the Joseon dynasty is about to fall, finds a dragonstone. She's like a young girl and gains control of this dragon and pushes out all the invaders. And then she becomes queen. And then her great-granddaughter is now the princess and is trying to prove herself to her country. She decides that the reason that she is not trusted is because she hasn't proven herself. So she goes to find her own dragon stone. So it becomes like this journey story. I actually am very partial to adventure stories and journey stories where you're legit journeying across land. So she has to journey across the land. And of course, there is already an existing dragon in the story. And so that's that one.
That is so exciting. I love that. It sounds like there's so much movement going on in that story. So now with these two books, would it be the one with the fox that you're slated to have out first?
So it's unknown. The Gumiho book, the fox book, is written and mostly ready to be submitted to publishing houses. And so I can't imagine that my other book, which I'm calling Dragon of Joseon.
That's a beautiful title, by the way.
Thank you. So I can't imagine that Dragon of Joseon would lap Gumiho because the first draft isn't even done. I would think that, fingers crossed, if everything goes the way that I dream, that Gumiho would come out first.
We're going to keep our fingers crossed. I'm sure, no doubt, it's going to do really well. I'm very, very excited for both your books. Gumiho, I definitely have a thing for this fox situation. I think that's super sexy at the same time and badass and kick-ass. Well, both stories are, but you don't really hear too much about foxes. You know what I'm saying? Like mythical foxes. That's really awesome and so unique and different, I think, in the market overall. I don't think I've heard of anything right now out there. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for both of them. I know it's going to do amazing. There's no doubt. You seem, just from me checking in and seeing what you're writing and what you're putting out there on Twitter and in our Facebook group, it sounds like you're really disciplined with your own writing and keeping to a schedule of being committed to getting the words on the paper, continuing forward with progress. So far, from your experience with these two works that you're working on, what do you find works best for you to keep you productive with your work progress?
It's definitely evolved over the years, which I like the idea of that. I like the idea that you're not set it too strictly in one way because every story is different. So the way you write every story will probably be different. I told you that story of the first book that I wrote really fast, like a pantser, wrote it in 19 days. I would never try to do that ever again. I don't discount that experience because obviously I had a story to tell, but you know, obviously the process is slower for every book since. And what I really do try to do is that even if I'm not actively writing usable words down for the story that day, that I'm thinking about the story. So I'll open up the document. If I'm not inspired to write, I'll go and find a scene that I love and I'll just read it. Almost like I'm my own fan.
Nice.
And I read it and I just have a good time and I just remember why I love the story and why I love the characters and the world that I'm trying to build here. And it gives me some ideas. I'll write those down really fast. Reading that thing that I love will push me to actively want to write in that moment some more stuff. But even if it doesn't, just reminding myself daily how much I love this story is so key for me, because if you lose that motivation and that rhythm, then it is a little bit harder every day that you're not doing it to pick it up again. Yeah, I try to at least read my work every day, even if I'm not writing.
I love that. That's really, really great advice. And I know the rest of our community will really take that to heart. Thank you for sharing that. And Kat, where can we find you on social media?
I'm everywhere. The easiest one to find me on is Twitter. I'm at Kat Cho, K-A-T-C-H-O. I'm also on Instagram. That one I'm at Kat J Cho. I do have a Facebook author page,
nice.
Kat Cho again. My website is katchowrites.com. I actually contribute to some blogs. I love group writer blogs, like crowdsourcing ideas.
Nice.
So the first one is called Writer's Block Party. We like puns.
That's awesome.
So it's writersblockpartyblog.wordpress.com. I just think that any time that you can interact with the community, it's just super fun. My last one is that YouTube link was actually to my brand new vlog.
Oh my gosh, congratulations.
Oh gosh, it's like a baby project. I don't even know like where it's going to go, but it's so fun because I'm such a weirdo anyway, so I talk to myself when I'm doing stuff. So I might as well be talking and recording it.
I agree.
And then putting it somewhere so that somebody can have use of it. I actually started that vlog because I wanted to vlog when I'm in Korea this spring. That was the main purpose, but we'll see.
I love the summaries you shared of your stories, Kat. And last, but most definitely not least, we have the awesome Alyssa Coleman sharing her story. Alyssa, what's up? How are you?
Hi, Yin. I'm so excited to be on the show.
Thank you so much for making time for us. Let's get started. I want the listeners to know how you first fell in love with writing.
Sure. So a couple years ago, I was living in New York and I was working at a talent agency. I got moved over to work in the literary department, supporting a literary agent. And I was super curious about all these scripts that we represented. So I started bringing them home at night. And my boss noticed this and she started asking for my opinions about them. She'd call me into her office to talk about it. And then she started having me read new scripts. And while I was doing this, I thought, hey, I could do this. And so I sat down and I wrote my first short play. I brought it into her and told her my friend wrote it and asked for her feedback because I was too embarrassed to admit that I had actually written it. She gave me some really helpful feedback on it. That kind of lit the spark. And I wrote plays for a number of years before I moved out to Los Angeles. Instead of writing screenplays, which most people do when they move from New York to LA, I decided to write my first novel. I started taking classes at UCLA Extension, and I got right into it. And that was about a year and a half ago now, maybe 2 years, and I haven't stopped since.
I feel like there's a lot of parallels between your life and my life. Your talent agency as in acting or?
Yeah, we represented actors, directors, and writers.
Oh my gosh, do you mind me asking which agency this is?
Sure. I worked for Hardin Curtis Associates. It's a boutique agency in New York.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I started off as an actor with Abrams Artist Agency.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You guys are basically connected. It's kind of like that sister world.
Yeah. I worked in casting before that, so I'm familiar with Abrams.
Wait, which casting?
I worked for Playwrights Horizons.
Oh, my gosh.
Off-Broadway theater. Yeah, I worked there for a couple years.
Our lives are so paralleled, except you went into it on the flip side of what I was doing. For you, did you just need a change of scenery when you moved to LA, or was it for work?
Actually, work brought me out here. I work with College Humor, the website, and that's my day job. I work for their parent company. They brought me out here to LA when our production team transferred out here and the office grew.
What? Oh my God, that's so awesome. You're still taking classes with UCLA?
Not currently, but I made a really great community of friends through there. And we have now a writing workshop that my professor from UCLA, Melanie Thorne, teaches. And so we meet regularly. We do a private workshop with her, which
oh
I found
God.
To be great.
I do remember in our Facebook group, you mentioned that your writer's group usually looks for places to gather. So this is the workshop you're talking about.
Exactly.
Yep. Oh my God. There we go. I love yeah. this. I think that's an amazing story, how your work brought you out here to LA. And instead of writing screenplays, like you said, you ended up writing a novel. Right before that, where did you get the inspiration for your story? And why don't you give us an overview or a snapshot of your work in progress?
The novel's set in a secret space colony that's hiding from this terrible war that's raging through the galaxy. And on the morning that the book opens, an enemy fighter ship has been spotted for the first time. My main character is an adventurous 16-year-old girl named Sevia Dawes, and this is her first day on the patrol, which is basically like the police force for the colony. So she's part of a group that's dispatched to find the ship. And even though she's the least experienced officer, has never even seen a spaceship before, she feels super prepared and she decides that she's going to find the ship. She spent all her life reading these stories of the heroes of the war, and she decides she's going to become the colony hero and be the one to find the ship and hopefully finally get the attention of her workaholic father, who is one of the colony's leaders. But then her plans go awry when she's captured by the ship's crew, and she learns that the war may already be in her colony and that the peace they enjoy may only be an illusion.
Wow. I need to know the inspiration behind this. This is so layered and in-depth. What's happening? Was there something in your life that happened that inspired this story?
Back in the day when I was younger, I used to write a lot of Star Wars fan fiction. So when I set out to write a novel, it was a really scary proposition to me to like spend that much time and energy. You know, you can write a play in a month if you have to. And I wanted to do something. I was like, I feel like I can write science fiction. So that's what I dove into. I wanted to write a story, even though this is not at all a Star Wars story. I wanted to write a story about someone who really wanted to be a hero and wanted to be one of the good guys, then found out that their lives had essentially been supporting the Empire their entire life.
How did you start collecting your ideas before you just went full speed?
I started out this novel pantsing, where I was just kind of writing, seeing where things went. And I very quickly realized that does not work for me. I am a plotter. So I sat down and I wrote a really detailed 12-page summary, paragraph by paragraph of what happened. Of course, that has changed several times as I've been going through different drafts. But the biggest one for me, we live in LA. Traffic right. is crazy. We spend a lot of time in our cars. My big discovery recently is that I have an iPhone. And so I use the Siri. When I get an idea, I grab it and I say, Siri, set a reminder 1 hour. And then I dictate my idea. And then so an hour later, when I'm out of the car, it pops up again and I can remember to write it down. That's been my big one lately.
That's a really good tip. I feel like a lot of our community, I could just hear the light bulbs going off. That's genius. Okay, so then when you do get home, I'm assuming that you just transcribe everything onto your computer.
I have a notebook for every book that I'm working on. So I have a new one for the new book that I'm going to be working on after this that I've already started jotting down notes in. I have it in my hands right now as I'm talking to you. I carry it around with me everywhere. I try to keep all my notes in there because when I'm feeling stuck, I can just flip through and see what causes me to be inspired.
When you do flip through, do you notice subconscious thoughts that come out of you when you're writing?
Oh, definitely. I think that there's always themes and moments where you're like, oh wait, actually, I was writing out of my subconscious there. And some of it's conscious. Like there are some people in here who, although I don't think they'd recognize themselves, but I've layered in things about how certain people made me feel.
Is there anything that's the most surprising for you that you didn't expect at all?
You know, one of the rebels, when she's captured, I started out thinking he was going to be kind of brash and exciting. And I realized very quickly that he was going to be based on someone in my own life who's actually very shy and bookish. That only came through in my third draft. That character changed dramatically and it just started working so much better. And I think that really surprised me.
I love those little surprises because you discover a lot about yourself too at the same time. And how about the hardest scene to write for you?
There's a scene that I've written probably 12 times. I think it's finally working exactly how I wanted it to. But it's a really complex scene. She goes in front of the leaders of the colony for the first time. I wanted it to be not just an amorphous voice that is one voice of the leaders. I needed to have a number of different people coming from different backgrounds with different opinions and to have even different opinions within the leaders of the colony itself. So it was very challenging to write that many new voices in a scene for the first time.
How were you able to accept that challenge and just go right through it?
I've brought that scene to my writing group twice now in two different iterations. I also have met a couple of people online who have been amazing in my development as a writer. I met one of them through Pitch Wars and she's been really fantastic. And then another through CP Match. They've both read various versions of this book at different points and have offered great feedback. I think that they've been instrumental in helping me write that scene in particular.
Amazing. One of the biggest tips I'm hearing from a lot of guests on the show is that make sure you have your own community of writers. It's cool to have family members and friends to support you, but no one else understands what writers are going through except for writers.
Oh, definitely.
I'm so happy to hear that you have your own group for that. How about overall, when you look back at everything you've written for your work in progress, is there a way that you find works best for you to keep you productive?
I work with Y'all West. So last year, I was running Veronica Roth's signing. I noticed so many young readers were coming up to her and asking for writer's advice. And she said, just keep writing and write what inspires you. Then one girl came up who was particularly intense and said, what is your best writing advice? And Veronica looked at her and gave what I found to be the most helpful writing advice I've ever received, which was practice writing when you don't feel like writing. because as soon as you're a published writer, you're going to have to write all the time when you don't feel like doing it. So that's something when I come home from work and I'm tired, I don't feel like writing half the time. And I sit down and I make myself do it. It's like going to the gym when you haven't gone for a long time.
Yeah.
Within a couple hundred words, I am feeling better. I'm feeling inspired. It's like working a muscle for me. I feel like I need to be on it because I would love to do this professionally. And I have to work all the time when I don't feel like doing it.
Talk about real talk.
Yeah.
Definitely no sugarcoating. I very much appreciate that. And I'm sure the rest of our community as well. Girl, you're hustling. So you come home, you're working on your work in progress, but you also, your day job, you work at College Humor. And then you're also volunteering at Y'all West?
I do. That's only once a year, though.
How are you able to juggle all of this?
There's this video interview between Ann Patchett and Anne Lamott, who I love, both of them. And I found this early on in my writing career, and they're talking about how do you make time to be a writer. Anne Lamott says, there's no more hours in the day, and you're never going to just get extra time when you sit down to write a book. You have to give up something to answer the call. For me, the answer was TV. So I don't watch a lot of TV. I rarely ever turn it on. When I'm on a break or I need just a mental break from writing, I'll watch TV. That's really where I was able to squeeze out a couple extra hours a week by not watching a lot of it.
What shows were you sacrificing?
Oh my gosh. Well, the one that has pulled me in recently was This Is Us.
Oh my God, cried every freaking episode.
I used to watch Parenthood and Friday Night Lights, and I'd take them to the gym and watch them on the treadmill, and I quickly realized I had to stop or I was going to get known as the girl who cries on the treadmill.
Oh, that's so cute.
But I love shows like that. I love really heartfelt dramas.
So that's so cute. I love hearing that. I'm sure a lot of people who see what you're doing, they might find it almost like the picture perfect world where, wow, she gets to write for her day job. That's amazing.
I don't write for College Humor. I am actually their HR person. So I'm the person who tells them what they can't do.
So you have HR background?
I fell into it, actually. After I got out of casting and working for the talent agency, I took a job in HR so that I could afford to take writing classes. I've been doing that now for a couple years.
Oh my gosh, that's so, God, you are so talented. Jeez, just throw you anywhere. You could just pick up all the skills and just start taking over. I'm like, damn, get it, girl. Talk about hustler. I love that. Most people would ideally love to write for a living, and whether it's like, you know, writing their novels or short stories or poems, but also it just shows like, you know, you got to pay the bills. Jeff Zentner's episode was fantastic about that. I had no idea he was a prosecutor during the day. And I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, it just came out of the blue for me. When he brought that up in the interview, I was like, wait, hold up. You have time to, what? Prosecute during the daytime and then freaking write a William C. Morris award-winning book on the bus?
On the bus?
Like, are you joking me?
Exactly.
Like, you're kidding me, right? But he dished out some real freaking honest advice that was very helpful, where it's like, listen, there is no shame in getting a job. And for him, he prefers to have a quote-unquote real 9-to-5 job so that it doesn't sacrifice his art.
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure to put on your writing, definitely.
Exactly. I know you mentioned earlier that, you know, it'd be nice to one day write full time, but I'm sure right now you're enjoying having this balance.
I do. Yeah, I'm really fortunate that I love the people I work with. I enjoy going to work with them every day. I love it because being at work energizes me and makes me happy. And so when I come home, I still have some mental leftover brain power to get through and write at the end of the day.
I love that. Oh my gosh. Alyssa, that was really helpful. And is there any other advice that you've received that you could pass on to the rest of our community?
So I have a post-it note on my desktop where I write that is a quote from Anne Lamott from that same interview that I already said, where she's talking to Ann Patchett. And it just says, stop not doing it, because she's talking about how you will always find excuses not to write. The house is too dirty. The dishes need doing. The dog needs a walk. You stop not doing it. Make it your priority. Yeah, every time I sit down to write, I see that and I'm like, all right, time to do it.
That is so badass. I love that. That needs to be framed, by the way.
I probably should frame it. Yeah.
That's great advice. And I think that everyone can really apply it to themselves. I know I will. And final question is, where can the rest of us find you on social media?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at Allie B. Coleman. Coleman has no E. It's just C-O-L-M-A-N. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram.
Amazing. Alyssa, you have been awesome.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Ian. This has been so much fun.
And that wraps up our 88th episode with 8 of our amazing listeners. Ladies, I had such a great time learning more about you. I am so used to seeing your photos on social media, so it's really nice to finally hear your voices and knowing what you sound like. Storytellers, I hope you had so much fun learning about your fellow community members. Isn't it crazy and amazing to see how much we have in common with each other? We're all going through very similar paths where you can see it's quite natural for us to be empathetic of each other's struggles and for us to also really understand each other's accomplishments, no matter how big or small, and celebrate them together like they're our own. Please head over to the show notes page from today's episode to learn more about each of our guests. We also listed their social media accounts where you can follow them and say hi. Head over to 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/88. And those are the numbers 88. After hearing from so many of you about how you wish you had more help in the kitchen so you could spend more time working on your writing, I am so excited that we're collaborating with Sunbasket. I've been trying to eat healthier over the last year, and it gets a bit tough when it comes to finding the time. I know many of you are like me and don't have all the time in the world to plan out our meals or trek to the farmer's market each time and figure out all the measurements and portions of each ingredient, and that's why you'll love Sunbasket. They deliver delicious, healthy recipes with easy-to-follow directions and pre-measured fresh ingredients straight to your door. And I'm talking about organic, non-GMO ingredients from the best farms and fishermen, and everything is seasonal and sustainably sourced. They have an amazing selection of paleo, gluten-free, vegetarian, breakfast, and new family options created by an award-winning chef, and they're all nutritionist approved. The recipes are delicious, and you'll literally have each meal prepared in about 30 minutes. Trust me on that because I've tried it myself, and it's just as delicious as it is super fast to prepare. Go to sunbasket.com/88cups today and get 3 free meals with your first order. That's sunbasket.com/88cups to get 3 healthy, easy-to-prepare meals. sunbasket.com/88cups. You also heard me talk about BookCon at the top of the show. BookCon is the event where storytelling and pop culture collide. You get to experience the origin of the story in all its forms by interacting with the authors, publishers, celebrities, and creators of content that influence everything we read, hear, and see. We're talking about panels and Q&As with the authors, celebrities, and content creators. You'll get to stop by for autographing sessions, and there's also a show floor with the most influential publishers in the world. You'll see special guests including Kevin Hart, Bill Nye, yes, the science guy, Kristen Ritter, and Jason Reynolds, to name a few. You'll also see many of the amazing guests from 88 Cups of Tea like Matt De La Pena, Sarah J. Maas, RJ Palacio, Marie Lu, Cami Garcia, Lee Bardugo, and many more. Check out thebookcon.com for more info. BookCon is the ultimate celebration of books where your favorite stories come to life, and it's all happening on June 3rd and June 4th at the Javits Center in my hometown in New York City. Head over to thebookcon.com to learn more. One final note before I wrap this up. Don't forget to join our Facebook group if you're looking for an intimate community for storytellers where you can check in about your writing and hang out with other awesome storytellers like the ones you heard from today in our 88th episode. You can also submit questions for future guests on our show, and we recently added live unboxing and book haul videos. So join me over in our private Facebook group at facebook.com/group/88cupsoftea. There's tons of love, support, and encouragement going on in this special community of ours. I'm so excited to meet you in there. So join us over at facebook.com/group/88cupsoftea. Have an amazing rest of your week, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.